Alrighty, it is June the 30th, 2021, the last day of June. It is 8:29 in the p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. This is the Fakeologist speaking. I'm talking to you from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the lockdown capital of North America, where we're still walking around in our face diapers. I think they just started letting people into the stores, more than three or four at a time. And things are getting back to normal for, I would say, a couple months, and then they'll slam us back down again in September. That's the program. If the program is out there, if anyone wants to hear the program, you could just go back to last year and listen to Chris Skye, who I do think is a very good guy. And here's a minute and 37 seconds to warm you up. There we go. Let's see if my links are not working today. What the frick frack is going on? Why aren't my links working? Come on, refresh page. I don't know what's going on that I can't click my links. Oh, here we go. I just refreshed the page. Here we go. Go ahead.
The mask is about compliance because they know Canadians like to do what they're told. So if they tell you you have to wear a mask, next they're going to tell you you have to contact trace. Then they're going to tell you you have to take the vaccine. And because Canadians like to do what they're told, they're hoping that everyone just complies. And then guess what, kids? Once you take your vaccine, like a dumb person that doesn't know any better, they're going to tell you, sorry, the vaccine isn't as effective as we thought it was going to be. So now you still got to wear your mask, still got to get contact trace, still have all the restrictions and social distancing, and still take your vaccine. And then what did you get out of all of this? You got a whole year where you weren't allowed to travel. Your business was closed. They took your rights and freedoms. They forced the vaccine on you. And what happened? The same amount of people died. Everything is the exact same, and now they're going to put you back on lockdown and bring it all the way till July of next year so they can do the same thing again. Bring you from July, August, and September, getting you off lockdown, but just to bring you back on lockdown again. If you idiots haven't figured it out yet, it's a perpetual cycle that you never get out of, and it's a way to take your rights, your freedoms, close your business, take your wealth. Why? So you become dependent on government. Why? If you're independent, the government works for you like it's supposed to. If you depend on the government to give you a paycheck to feed your family every month because they closed your business on you, now the government doesn't work for you. The government rules you. So instead of a middle class, we have the government, upper class, and the lower class dependents that rely on the government to survive. In other words, we have a slave class. And that's what they're trying to do. It's that simple.
All right, that went viral around the world. I think I played that before. I probably even double posted it on Fakotube.com, which is my video platform service. Coming up to a million views. I believe it's been going for over a year now, so that's pretty good. And this is where I put all my favorite Fakeologist videos, the ones that possibly are going to be taken down off the YouTube, although there's a million other services right now. I apologize, last 2 days I got taken away from my normal show times. Money called, so I had to attend to business. But normally I do the show Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Now, here's a little tip. Tomorrow I'm going to try and get Hoy Polloi and Simon Shack together of the cruiseforum.info website. Yeah. I've known and talked to those guys for about 9 years. So tomorrow, that'll be at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time because tomorrow is Dominion Day or Canada Day. Yeah, I don't know if it was canceled officially or not, but it's still a holiday. Who knows if it's going to be the last Canada Day because Canada is a post-nation state, which is why they're smashing us hard to disintegrate the old idea of a country to bring us into mega regions and mega cities. And that dovetails into what I want to talk about tonight because that leads to Agenda 21. That led me to Rosa Corre, and that led me to Nikki Rapana. That led me to Nordica Friedrich, which I believe is her father's surname. Maybe Nikki's name is Nikki Rapana Friedrich. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask her. So I listened to both of them, and I really, the last audio I listened to, I think it was the Purple Triangle or something. It's on Facebook. I honestly can't remember, but it's on FakoTube if you want. It was such a good interview. I did put it on FakoTube because a lot of people don't like to use Facebook, Feces Book, as I call it. And you have to be logged in usually to use Facebook. So that's why I lifted it and put it over, I put it over here. Let me just see if I can use the old search engine of, what's it called? FakoTube. Ah, it's called the Perfect Triangle. Well, that did work. So this is the Perfect Triangle, Revolution Radio, Operation Scorpio. Yeah, so this was earlier this year. That was a pretty good interview. I'm going to give it a thumbs up right now. Well, I just heard a buzzing noise. So that means I think someone just came into the room. Did you guys hear that? No, I didn't hear that. Wait, we're going to go see if Nordica is trying to communicate with me. I think she is. Shoot, I went to join. It's telling me that my browser on my phone isn't supported. One sec. All right, maybe she can't use the Restream IO link. Might have to talk to her on the Facebook, which I have never tried. I can try here if you wish. So I've never talked to anyone on the Facebook Messenger. I'm guessing it will work. I don't see why not. I don't see why it wouldn't work. So anyway, that led me to Nordica. She's a very interesting person, as you can see by her public, I don't know, I hope this is her public Facebook page. Because I'm her friend, so maybe only friends can see this, but she is just a very interesting person. She speaks well. It looks to me as if she edited the book of her mother, and it's called 2020, Our Common Destiny, and the Definitive Anti-Communitarian Manifesto, two books in one. And I think it even needs an update. That's what she said. So one of the reasons that I like to encourage my guests to test drive the link I give them. That way we don't have to find out at the last minute that they can't call in. I will potentially take phone calls. We do have a couple phone numbers for you. If you're in the United States, 810-666-1984. I'll put that up here. And in the Republic of Kanata, it's 902-400-1984. You don't have to remember the last four digits because they're 1984, like the book by Eric Blair. And I got a funny number in the U.S., the 666. I couldn't resist that one because it's obviously psychic driving of the number 6. And just came up 810, happens to be Flint, Michigan, which is obviously hometown of my favorite movie, Roger and Me, by the very hard to understand politically Michael Moore. And those are the phone numbers. We may take calls. We'll see how the call goes tonight. I would like to have a decent-sized call tonight with Nordica. Hopefully, she will have lots to say, and I will try not to overtalk. Let me just make a show note here while we're waiting for Nordica to struggle in. I said earlier in the month that I was going to close down the postal box. So today I thought my postal box expired right around now, so I called to see if there was any mail. Now, if there was no mail, I would have just said forget it. But of course, it's been expired for just less than a week, and he said there were three letters in it. So I thought, well, I know I'm missing at least two, because earlier in the year I had said that, or someone told me they had sent me some donations. Thank you very much. But I didn't get them, and that was months after they said they sent them. So I sort of gave up on the idea. And, of course, Murphy's Law I called, and apparently there was some mail there. So then I had to renew the mailbox. He gave me a deal for the year. So I just renewed it for the year, and then I collected the three donations. And if you go to, let's see, if you go to fakeologist.com/donate, you will see three fantastic. Actually, I'll go to the main blog. If you go to the main blog, you go down a bit, you'll see a picture. I took a picture, and here we go. One is from Anonymous. I'm looking at the handwriting. It looks like Mrs. Fakeologist says it's a female's writing. Very nice script. And that female unit sent me a Ulysses Grant. And then this is from Ricky. He sent me a Ulysses S. Grant. And then this person, I think his name is Derek. He sent me a check, which I don't normally accept, but we'll see how it goes. He sent me $75. So this is the first check I'll ever try to cash, and it should go through. But yeah, thank you super so much. So guess what? The postal box is open. It's back. So for those that can't see the screen, it's just address your donations to Fakeologist, Box Victory 33. That's 14 Bravo-1822 Whites Road in Pickering, Ontario. Lima 1 Victor 0 Bravo 1 in Kanata. Hit me up there, and I will gladly accept your donation. Let me know if you send it, by the way. Just email me at ima@fakeologist.com. Let me know, and I'll look for it. I would give it at least 2 weeks. But yeah, so that's a change of plans. You see, I'm not so rigid that I'm just going to stop a certain system after I made a decision. I'll reverse course here and there. So let's see if we can make this P.O. box hum again, guys. Please, do you like the show? The best way to send cash, I don't know, but for as long as cash is going to be in existence, might be another couple years, just fold the cash up, put tin foil or put a couple pieces of thick paper around it, and send it in. You don't need your return address. You don't need any of that. I would like to know who donated this one from Jacksonville, Florida. And that was 2 Feb 2021. If that was you, I'd like to give you credit. So for sure, hit me up. Let me know. You deserve to be acknowledged. Now, here's Nordica. I'm hearing beeping. Where is the beeping coming from? Too many damn windows. Okay. Shoot, I can messenger Spotty with video. Well, I'll do audio then. I don't want video. Okay, let's see if the call works. Allow it. Okay, I don't know if this is going to work. We'll see. Hello. 2212.
Hello, testing.
Can you hear me, Nordica?
Hi there. Yeah, I think I got you on here.
All right. Well, yeah, we don't need video. I don't use video myself, so it's not fair to ask to see you.
All right.
But we will.
Yeah, I think it's coming through. It's nice and clear. Sometimes the software isn't that great, and it's all digitized.
Yeah, well, this is probably going to be better than you using the telephone. The POTS, the plain old telephone system, usually isn't as good as a computer digital signal for voice. So
yeah.
As long as you can hear me, I can hear you clearly.
All right.
I'm going to dial you up to the maximum that I can. So obviously the browser link to Restream.io didn't work for you.
Can you message me a link for people to listen in?
I certainly can. It's fake all. Where would you like me to put it? In the messenger?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Fakeologist.com/live. That gives you an unlimited set of links. We have an audio link. We have YouTube. We have Facebook.
The live right now.
We have Twitch.
Okay.
We have DLive. We have Twitter. And we have my own platform that has been spotty, but it should be working, called Fakotube.com.
Okay.
So there's almost unlimited ways to listen in. And hopefully the audience will find this compelling and interesting.
Okay, great.
You sound a little different than the person I listened to on what's the name of the show? The Perfect Triangle show.
Revolution.
Yeah.
Revolution Radio.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that was, I don't do these very often. So, that was, it was March, I believe, was the month that I did that show, talking to those folks. And then, one of the caller-ins was, a gal I've known for a while named Jenna. She's great and has, really great questions and talking points and stuff. And like, I don't really warm up for them. I don't really, have a routine for it. You know what I mean? Cause it's not really something I do a lot. And my mom and I both, you know, Nikki Raffano, obviously the author, co-author of the 2020 Our Common Destiny with me. We kind of just winged the interviews and you catch us at like different times of the day and there's kids grabbing at, you know what I mean? It's just like the usual chaos of your home office. And so I've been trying to prepare and get into my radio voice, my talking points.
Oh, it's coming back. Now I heard a bit of it. You have a little bit of the Demi Moore voice going on, and I really like that voice. It's sort of the scratchy voice.
Thanks. Oh man, I loved her in frankly everything.
Ghost.
And who was the other one? Who was the other really deep voice gal who was the actress in the 90s? It was Kathleen O'Hara, something like that.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Kathleen.
Romancing the Stone. Kathleen Turner. Yeah, Romancing the Stone. I always thought that those ladies were like, you know, just great. Like you close your eyes and you're just like, what a babe.
Yeah. So. Yes. I did like my favorite movie back when I could care less about movies was Ghost. I thought it was a really a real tearjerker.
Yep, yeah, I was probably a little young for that. It was probably one of the ones that I snuck. I got to sneak around and watch.
Yes.
But yeah, classic. So I was, I usually kind of just go with the flow and respond, but I was wondering what's a little bit about, like, you, your background, and the basis, you know, for
I'll
your show,
you
obviously. Fake.
I will tell you whatever you want to know. Just so you know, my wife usually accuses me of doing all the talking, even with a guest. And she said when she tunes in, she gets annoyed because she wants to hear the guest, not me. So I'm going to try and restrain myself because obviously the audience knows who I am. I've been doing on and off audio since 2012, which I'm going to go really quick for you. I'll give you the cliff notes on who I am, but I woke up to the way the world works in 2012. And I basically just found a software radio station where I could pretend I was a talk show host. And I started talking, basically saying, hello, this is Who from Whoville. I want to know if there's anyone out there that has found out what I found out. And this is my call out to the world. And within 20 minutes, I had quite a few people that seemed to have been waiting for me. And they said, yeah, we already figured all this out a long time ago. You're a little late, but we'll talk to you anyway.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to the party. Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, the shout to the void thing, I think, is, you know, it's like part of people's journey, too, is just like it's sort of feeling, I think this information, no matter what, how it finds you or you find it or whatever, people's little, their individual path to whatever truth or realizing that you don't know things that you used to take for granted, and then feeling a little isolated with that, I think is a super common thing, as is, I've been noticing parallels between, I'm really interested in and follow like the science of like neuroscience and neurodiversity, especially with all the attention given to transhumanism, and that like scientific, you know, study of biology, human biology, and evolutionary biology. In fact, like I have hung around people in various levels of conspiracy, either awareness or enthusiasm, or just know or heard stories or worked at these government sites and had clearance and have since started talking about it, or any like number of, you know, backgrounds. And the isolation with the information is so common. There's, if you're lucky, there's a really supportive but sort of confused maybe spouse or, you know, partner of some kind, or just family members that just value you even if they don't agree with you. And so I've been really fortunate, obviously, to be collaborators with my mom. And she totally gave me the opportunity to call her crazy and walk away a million and one times, you know, just because she's like a big fan of individual, you know, discernment and making your own choices and whatever feels right for you, sort of an illogical place to come from. I think for the attention that we give to logic and our thesis and everything that we have like given people, we say a lot of your rationale will rely on your feelings, and your gut instincts as a person are a lot aligned with your gut instincts as an animal. And I think the study of artificial intelligence and animal intelligence and human intelligence and evolutionary biology is, it's just been this really cool path of like, you know, a mix of your faith is tested, your scientific inquiry is tested, your limits as a person, what you can take mentally. Because I think a lot of people are walking around looking like normal, and they've got, you know, their shit together, and they're still functional people, but there's a part of them that's really isolated and lonely with info. And so hence the 2 a.m. scouring YouTube, going down rabbit holes. You know, I think that stuff is really great. And when people find you and that's your enclave, your tribe, you know, it's just, it's so fortunate, because I think a lot of these, you know, like old timers, I notice a lot of sourdoughs because I'm from Alaska, and they've had these like odd opinions that offset them from, you know, normal society, mainstream opinions and understandings of things. So I just, as far as like that goes, you know, being an alternative media radio host, I always think it's so great. I'm like, I'm so glad you have a working relationship, a spouse that'll give you, you know, positive criticism on your shows. Like, I think you talk too much. I think that's just wonderful. And then your guest goes, tell me about yourself.
Yeah, I know. Well, I called you out of the blue, and that's usually how I do most of my interviews. I do a lot of audio listening. I listen to lots of stuff, and I get on tangents. I go down rabbit holes, and all of a sudden I really would like to talk to certain people. So I just asked them, like I asked you, would you like to talk to me, even though you haven't ever heard of me, most likely. And even if I give most people the link, they don't usually look into it, or they just say I don't do interviews, and then they go and talk to someone else, which is fine. I don't mind, as long as I can hear what they have to say. I don't mind who I listen to, as long as they're not too controversial in the sense that they might be a misdirector as a host themselves.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, I don't necessarily, so many of these channels lead to, like, obviously, there's the white supremacy channel, and the traditional values, return to traditional values type stuff that I really try to be. I hate to be a fence sitter, and I hate to be a moderate of like any kind, obviously, like in a philosophical level, because you just want to be, you want to be, you know, standing your truth and stuff. But there's a part of me that really has to, you know, advocate for, like, for example, there's a lot of ableism, mental ableism, I think, in truth, the truth movement, the truth industry, whatever people wanted to call it, alternative media. Mm-hmm. And it's all about, you know, there's like a whole sector of society here that I feel like we automatically are, you know, we're clinching out. Like, there's a, I mean, the dialectic that we identified, so many years ago that we thought would come to like a head in 2020 and really like facilitate, you know, a massive data gathering effort, you know, on this global scale. You know, it was going to take whatever form it was going to take. So the pandemic was obviously great. It just fit neatly into this slot. And you know, like arriving at that, it was very much like, well, here we are in a rational, scientific, logical space, feeling like the information that we're getting from our irrational source, you know, our gut feelings, our instincts, our dreams, stuff that can't necessarily be quantified, is leading us to these really great rational conclusions. So, like, I really try and get people to, you know, open their mind a little bit to, like, if you come from like a European, the national, they want to protect their national heritage and identity, and there's Americans who are, you know, trying to do the same thing. And on the one hand, we're identifying, yes, this dialectic is being set up to make you feel threatened. Your way of life is established, the status quo, and they coming in acting like everything is going to change. Your whole world becomes a corridor. It's managed under these indigenous tribal environmental standards. And then just all hell obviously breaks loose. So in the midst of all that, what we said was going to happen, this is definitely, it's not even a prediction. It's just read their plans. They've stated this. So in the middle of that, you know, navigating how the dialectic divides people, all the different convictions that people can have that can really cut them off from others. And we always just really encourage to keep an open mind. And sometimes those non-rational sources, like the sourdough that everybody says is crazy, who lives in the woods.
What is the sourdough? You know, sorry to interrupt. What is the sourdough?
A sourdough. Oh, it's like an Alaskan or Yukon, like a Canadian type of term for old timer.
Okay.
You know, the people who have got those odd bits of information, you don't know who they are or where they've been, and they could have holes in their boots and their feet sticking out, but they could have $1 million in gold in their back pocket. You know, just that sort of like illusionary breaking the veil. That's another thing that we try to do is, like, I guess our brand is sort of like that we are, that we're Alaskans. And since that's so foreign to most people, they sort of have this Hollywood or maybe just like Jack London, like a literary, it's almost like a trope, you know, this Alaskan quest type of thing. And we're like, yeah, the land of the rugged individual and the, you know, the most recently genocided and conquered and colonized indigenous tribes. Alaska Natives have a lot at stake. So we like putting the lens that we had on like world issues, like the global reset and also your local development plans and who's involved, who's sort of being used as the little patsy out front. You've got your, obviously the African American, the Hispanic, the indigenous. We've been trying to help out for years our, you know, indigenous and immigrant, you know, cultures, including that of European, so that everybody is actually represented in this and they're not just sort of wiped out in this dialectic setup. Like, here, you guys are all against each other because we wrote it that way. So I don't know if we've succeeded in any kind of, like, we didn't unify anyone under a banner, but if our book reached people and they saw something authentic and genuine in our voice and our, you know, the source of our concern for people is that we just want to empower individuals. And that sounds like corporatese, like meaningless. Obviously, empowerment is sort of a bad word, I think, to a lot of people, because it just means you're not going to go along if anybody has a voice. So, you know, that opening up the question of free will and human evolutionary biology and our neurodiversity, you know, just like open-mindedness, seeing in the dialectic how you're getting roped in. You can say, well, this is how they got you. You come from a background of you really love the environment and you saw how certain corporations were abusing it, or, anything about animal rights or anything about immigrants. You know, they're sucking people in and then literally putting them on their little chessboard. And what we hope to do with the writing, anything you find, the book, articles, was let people know you're here on the game board. And if that's not where you'd like to be, and if you don't like a hand up in your back to be puppeteered and sort of directed in these predetermined meetings and syntheses of, you know, planning organizations, if you don't want to be an organ of someone else, here's a couple tips and tricks.
Yeah. Hey, Nordica, and, I think Nikki just joined in. Is that your mother? Or is that you?
Great. Yeah, no, I did send her the link, and I wasn't sure if she was going to be able to get it to work.
Yeah, I see Nikki just joined. Nikki, can you hear us? Nikki. Well, I don't.
Hello.
I think that was you. Did you say hello, Nordica, or was that Nikki?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay. I don't see any sign of life in the square that says Nikki on it, so I'm not sure she's... Oh, she just dropped away.
Yeah, she might be having the same problem that I did.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. But let me get back to the beginning here, because I kind of got away from introducing you properly. So you
are... Right, we just sort of launched.
We just started talking, and you're a great talker, so I'll... let me get back to introducing everyone and how I got to you in the first place. And that is that I started looking into, basically I look into media fakery. That's how I got talking. And I started talking about 9/11 because I thought it was the biggest psyop in the history of the world. And despite my theories on what I think happened on 9/11, the bottom line I thought was that it proved to me that the entire world could be fooled and the people that did it would get away with it probably forever, because it told me there's some certain fatal flaws in the human condition that they cannot identify when they're being lied to, and especially if it's on such a mass scale. So that really scared me, in the sense that I knew that the whole world can be fooled, and that means we're ripe for something else to happen, and now we're in it. So I decided to concentrate on 9/11 to try and expose that for years and years and years, even though it's not that interesting. And it just show people that, yes, this proves to me that the whole world can be fooled and it will just go down in history as it was stated, as the official story. That's why I went on to that. So because I was always interested, now my mind is cracked open to this way of thinking, I started looking at all kinds of things that I thought were fake and media fakery. And that led to all kinds of things like who controls the world, what other events in this world are fake, how much of history is real, how much is fake. And then I got into things like Agenda 21 and this overarching plan to control the world, to the New World Order and the One World Government. And just lately, of course, with COVIDs, I call it COVIDs, by the way. That's COVID plus AIDS. We call it COVIDs. I like that moniker, although there's others. So then with Agenda 21, just even in the last few months, I started really listening to what appears to be your arch nemesis, Rosa Corey, who's probably the most famous person that goes around exposing Agenda 21. And then I heard... or saw some comments that she ripped you guys off from with her book. Basically, it was a lifting of your information. So then I had to go find out who you guys were, because obviously you guys weren't doing the rounds as much as Rosa Corey was for the last 20 years. So then I looked you guys up, and there wasn't quite as much information or video out there of you guys. But you had to dig a little deeper. And then I got to your mother, Nikki Rapana, Frederick, and then, of course, I heard about you through that one podcast that I pointed out earlier that I posted on my video site, FakoTube. And I thought your mother is very, very interesting and intelligent. And then I heard you, and I thought you're a very good speaker as well. You're very interesting. It sounds like you're brought up into this from a young age, so you have even more of an very interesting perspective as well. And then I saw, of course, the book, and you're the editor, or you edited it, and your mother wrote it. So
yeah, we co-wrote it. We put her out as the name,
mm-hmm.
so that clarification is always, sort of happened. And people ask, like, well, what role do I play? Am I just a graphic artist? And it's kind of like almost like alternating sentences with
oh,
us.
Wow.
Like, she was obviously an adult, and she was into her 40s, and I was a teenager when we got started. So I was really just like, I've always been a speller and really into editing and
wow.
just love code and layout. So I got started just like a support arm, you know, will you read this? And just a fresh set of eyes. And I was also in high school and college, and I was really academically motivated, and at that time really wanted to have a college career and a destiny sort of within, you know, academia. Cause I thought it belonged to me at that age. The entitlement there was, as far as education, we didn't have money or anything like that, but we knew that the doors would open if you just wrote a great paper, which is what people sort of, you know, like the key to unlock the door to everything that you think you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And then it ended up. Yeah, and I think it's.
Could you give a little bit of family background for us? Just how, where you started, where Nikki started? Because I don't really know a lot about your history, your family history. And you tell as much as you want, but I think it's kind of important to the story. If you could just give broad strokes. You don't have to get too detailed, because I really want to talk about communitarianism and COVIDs, because that's what most people care about today, because it's extremely relevant. So yeah, just paint a broad stroke where you guys started, you know, your family, brothers, sisters, blah blah blah, and how you got to, I think you're in Wasilla, Alaska.
We live in Wasilla, Alaska. Been here for about 10 years,
and I never heard of that until the lovely you know who emerged from Wasilla. Thrilla from Wasilla, I call her.
We're actually kind of like oddball fans of Sarah. Like, I sort of, it's a small town, so you sort of rub elbows with people. And you know,
I loved her.
Palin family.
I'm a huge fan. Absolutely.
The Palins are actually, they're like brawlers, which in Alaska were sort of sport fighters.
right.
So when they have their big old drama, like the Palin family got in a fight, we're all good for them. It's a funny culture. I was born not here in Wasilla, but in Anchorage, which is just like 45 minutes away. I'm 36. I just turned 36.
Right.
So I was born in Alaska in the 80s. My mom came up here in the 70s, part of like a pipeline. She is originally born in Wisconsin and raised like army brat. She grew up partly in Germany as a kid and just all over the States. She was raised by a U.S. Army drill instructor. My grandfather was a 82nd Airborne, Special Forces, like Airborne Ranger. So her background was very much, like, obviously she grew up in Germany on post. And so moving back to the States when she was a kid actually sort of made her, like, the weird kid, because she was technically fluent in German and sort of not, like, money, our family does not have money like that, but just these sort of the European sensibilities. So people thought that was like a money thing, like you've got a piano in the house, your children all play classical instruments, you're sort of pushing them to that.
Cultured. Cultured. It's a culture.
It's really not like there's no I would not describe it as putting on airs. It was just like, you know, that interest and that level of like all American, you know, you've got the sports. Like we just had a very, I would say apple pie American upbringing, like obviously Germany in the 60s post-war. So my mom's, she really, has tried to separate herself from the work, but obviously people want to be introduced to us. So my mom's character is being like an army brat. That's very much her, insistence that the American experiment was well-intentioned and co-opted. And a lot of people think, oh yeah, they just want to breeze right past that and just lump it all in imperialism. And when we reevaluated, you know, sort of history, it was from our point of view of like who we are, as like Alaskans. And it's a little different up here. Like, where I'm from, I was raised like partly in the States. So when we lived in Seattle for about 10 years is where we were really exposed to, the ground floor of the gentrification in the cities, the weed and seed programs, which is what people started, those red flags that Rosa Corey was throwing up, with her work. It was, you know, she was a great whistleblower persona. I just wanted to say really quick, I haven't spoke publicly about the passing of Rosa Corey. And I just want to say I grieve in the loss of human life.
Yeah.
Although she was professionally at odds with us. And I would say that she did violate our copyright by stealing sort of what was our, not just our brand, but our signature and sort of the verbiage that I chose. The interesting thing about the Rosa Nikki Rapana, you know, that diametric opposition is what Rosa chose to take and what people recognized from our work was the marketing language that I chose. And the I'm actually like, you know, I write constantly for everything that we do. And the story was, quote, this is the story of how two American women followed a paper trail from their lowly Seattle neighborhood to the elite boardrooms of the United Nations, you know, with regards to Agenda 21, sustainable development, the whole galvanization of world powers around Rio and welcoming in a new era of environmental, technocratic, quasi-religious, you know, these legal systems based in ancient, ancient religious codes of law, all that stuff. She pretty much just, she did, I would say, just lifted it and said, this is a story of how I, you know, followed the paper trail. And a lot of people were able to just point blank say, which paper trail and why is your information about Seattle exactly duplicate of Nikki Rapana and Nordica Fredericks based on their, you know, their initial, you know, our experiences with, you know, the data gathering and the Delphi community meetings, where they pretty much just gaslighting, you know, everybody and telling them, well, it's already been decided, even if they're getting feedback from the neighborhood, it's, these plans are already being enacted as they're written and your participation is just for show. And, you know, so, you know, when people ask about Rosa and stuff, we actually, our professional, opposition to her even went so far as a friend of ours, Chris Katko, a political cartoonist. He's a Jewish American, and he is sort of an angry cartoonist. It's really great work. His work is very visceral. It's quite offensive.
What's his name? Let me look it up.
His name is Chris Katko, K-A-T-K-O, and he created a political cartoon for us. I got it as a gift, and had this very offensive drawing of Rosa caricatured, and her persona, her caricature in the comic is she's got a big cauldron, and she's got our book inside of her cauldron, and she's stirring it around, and she's turning it into behind the green mask, her version where she removes the importance of communitarianism, Amitai-Etzioni, the communitarian network, the Talmudic origins of these sustainable development you know, in the international law, you know, the basis for all of these plans, programs, policies, and laws. You know, there's like 17 different categories of you know, regulatory measures that you can use to control people, land use, water, just literally, you know, from the ground up, actually even below the ground. So his gift, you know, of that cartoon was at the time, and over the years, it's made us feel good about something that you just usually have to walk away from. You don't have the means to, you know, fight this. We just said our piece and hoped that it would ring out and be heard. But I do want to express, you know, my sadness over her passing. I don't want it to be thought. There was a lot of people who are in the media who are currently like getting a lot of traction and viewers. One lady in particular, her name is Allison McDowell. And
yes,
she
yes, I know
thought
her.
That us, she thought that us talking openly about, you know, Rose's actions and what, you know, some of the controversy, I said the controversy regarding Rosa as an author who catapulted to the forefront of the alternative media, you know, it was just a very much, there's always a parallel in Hollywood. They always seem to be lifting great stories and just sort of putting them through the processor. So I would say Rosa is the American cheese of the information that you can get. It's fine. It's fine for grilled cheese, you know, but it's really not the same stuff. It's not the same. I would say we're more like Irish butter. Really right. Grain-fed and came from the earth as a result of our actual, you know, elbow grease. And I was 12, 13 years old when this work started. So just it's professional. It's information of ours that was copyrighted and established and put out there that got, you know, spun through a little spinner. Yeah. So it was personal as well for
me. So do you think she ruined your message? Did she take your message and spin it away from what you wanted to say?
I have no idea how many people Rosa actually reached. For that matter, I have no idea how many people our work has reached in its, because she's not the only one. If you do a search for the Hegelian dialectic online, we used to be like the first four results, like our different pages.
Right.
And then Barrett Keough's, she had her ministry, a little snippet of it. A lot of people have reproduced it. And, you know, I would say half the time it's got both of our names spelled properly. And a lot of the times it says published anonymously on the internet. They took the what is the Hegelian dialectic, which is, like, you know, half of the anti-communitarian manifesto. That's part one. Part two is the historical evolution of communitarian thinking. They sort of just took that and created the little, you know, the blurb that you'll see, the like page, just to draw people in and say, welcome to my mysterious corner of the internet. Here's a document that is not attributed to anybody. And that's happened so many millions of times that like Rosa was literally like number 150,000. You know, but she was the most potent, I think. It just like create a detour. Like, oh, look at me instead. I'm shiny. I've got a bit of money. Here's my credentials. And we're like nobodies. That's sort of the credential that we claim is that we're nobody. And we stick by that. Mm-hmm. Whereas she was involved in, I believe she was a real estate appraiser.
She was an appraiser. Yeah. That story made sense. Allen, who's often on many of my calls, asks, do you think that Rosa Corey was controlled opposition? We study all this in our media fakery psyops discussion. I'm sure you know what controlled opposition is, I'm sure, based on your what I know of you.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you think where was she misdirecting to? That's the question.
Well, at first, before there was the enmity was created, you know, that opposition. Oh, here you go. Here you've got an arch nemesis.
Yeah.
She was inviting my mother This is about 2011. This is, let's say, spring 2011. So we're looking at almost 10 years on the dot. 10 years ago on the dot, Rosa Corey was calling me at home because my mom over the years has not had like a phone or a cell phone or a landline. She just goes back and forth. She doesn't always have, you know, connectivity or electricity. So I had the most regular phone number for people and was printing the books and selling them at a lot greater volume than we are right now. And Rosa was trying to get us to promote the book, and actually not us. She called me and wanted to be patched through to my mother, and she wanted to bypass me completely. And she excluded me from this conference that she was planning.
Well, how old were you then?
Like a post.
You were. You were 26.
10 years ago.
So you were a fully formed adult.
Yeah.
But she.
I guess I was 25.
I guess she got the impression that your mother was the main author. That's just a bit of ageism, just based on age.
My phone has rang for years since about 2003. We put out the first article, What is the Hegelian Dialectic, 2002, mm-hmm. and then Historical Evolution of Communitarian Thinking came out 2003. So since I was 18 years old, my phone has rang with people asking me for my mother and like almost demanding, you know, like, and then they're like, who the heck are you? You know, you're in my way. And I'm like, I'm the only person that's going to help you get, you know, to where you think you need to go. And I actually am really, I try to give people some grace, because I know that I was a confused, maybe aggressive person at different times in my life, depending on what I was going through. I wasn't always politically motivated or having to do with my work, but I just, you know, I try to give people grace. And so Rosa was one of the people that I was allowing myself to show grace to people, and I didn't have any idea of her background or motivations. It was the first I'd ever heard of her 10 years ago, before she was so widely reproduced mm-hmm. in so many videos and such a presence. She was not a presence at that time.
Yeah.
And she was setting up this conference in California, and her only interest was in my mother. And I just got a red flag, I mean, obviously, there's ego and there's all that is a part of it. And at 25, I'm sure I wanted to be recognized. But I also just had genuine concern for my mother's safety, for what most people who follow these topics and go down these rabbit holes. I don't think I even have to explain why at 25 years old with two children, I expressed concern about strangers calling and trying to get my mom a plane ticket tomorrow and have her be on. And I was like, sort of,
Were you in Alaska or Seattle at that time?
We were in Alaska. We moved back to Alaska like 15, 16 years ago and have lived here ever since.
So you think that Rosa, so you were worried that Rosa was going to bring her team up there and just co-opt your message and threaten you guys?
No, she had a conference planned in California, and what she was trying to do was kick off like a tour of book promotion. And my mom, the first thing that my mom did was like, wow, thank you so much. Like, wow, I don't really do these things. But I could start. And Rosa chastised both of us for not promoting ourselves strongly, for not being in the bookstore.
Was that a fair comment?
What's that?
Would you call that a fair comment? Would you think that was fair, what she said?
Yes, because we did keep it more like an internet document, and just a small publishing company was in low volume at first.
Yeah.
And she wanted us to blitz, but like sort of blitz with her. And I'm sure that I don't have to even introduce the concept of a handler to people who are interested in, you know, things like fakeology. But I just got these red flags of just like handler vibes. I've had it happen to me a million times. I'm a business owner. I also produced a music festival up here in Alaska for 5 years. And I would say 75% of the people that ever actively approached me regarding my festival did so disingenuously with the intent to handle me mentally, emotionally, financially, and professionally.
Wow.
And I would say that my spidey senses on Rosa were very accurate. On a personal level, I have no
interest in, or, you know, I have no interest in casting aspersions on anyone's sexuality at all. But a lot of these people who are involved in this industry are very interested in after party type things. And I was very concerned for my mother's safety as far as, I just,
so you thought Rosa wanted to pick up your mother?
What's so they just, it was very, insular. And the outright rejection of the suggestion that I even come, or if that it was importance that my mother had.
She wanted to separate you from her mother, so you thought she wanted to move in on your mother? Because I guess Rose is an admitted lesbian, but that doesn't really make her a predator, does it?
Not automatically in my mind at all. I'm actually, like, bisexual, you know, and I advocate for understanding on queer issues, while straddling the whole New World Order, transhumanist agendas.
Wow.
It's actually, it's a pretty tight rope to walk.
I've actually heard you describe yourself, your racial makeup, your I don't like to use the word race, your ethnic makeup, your sexual makeup. You've laid it all out on the line, at least on that one audio I listened to. So You're
there's
quite the
there's
mosaic.
No way to run from who
you're quite
you really
the mosaic.
Are, and I just, yeah, I just, and my mom is, she's heterosexual, you know, and she was just like, she kind of surprised, like, what? And I, it's, we have this, I have a hard time keeping my direction of my focus on the professional, because the personal interweaves itself constantly. You're dealing with these people, and you're, you know, speaking with them on professional terms, and then you've got all these.
Hey, Nordica, can you take a call? Here, I think we got a call coming. Maybe it's your mother.
Yeah, that sounds fine. Oh, that would be really cool if it was.
I think they just bombed out. Let me call them back. Sometimes I miss the call. I'll call them back and let's see if they want to talk.
Great.
737 area code. Anyone know where that is? Let's see.
Nope, doesn't ring a bell.
737 area code. Let me just ask Brave Search where that is. Maybe they didn't want to call in. Oh, that's from Texas. I don't know anyone in Texas. Can you hear that ringing?
I know a couple people in Texas.
Can you hear that ringing?
Yeah,
sorry, the person
cool,
you were trying to reach has a voicemail.
Okay. Sorry, maybe they didn't want to talk. Maybe it's just a crank caller. Yeah, okay. So you were worried that Rosa wanted to co-opt your message, but... Okay, so do you think that she was misdirecting from the whole communitarian message in any way? Because really, I never even I don't even think she said the word communitarianism too many times. Mainly, she was talking about Agenda 21. That's the message
and
I got.
And sustainability.
And sustainability and SDGs. And those are the only things the world actors that are called prime ministers and presidents... That's what they are saying. They've never once uttered the word communitarianism. So I thought your message was a deeper dive into the surface level that Rosa was giving us. And let's be honest here. You're a very deep woman. Your mother's a very deep thinker as well. The masses, we're pretty stupid. So to get deep into a topic is you're going to lose your audience. So I think that you got to just hit the high notes and then only go into the deep stuff for the occasional interloper that wants to go deeper. Do you know what I mean? So I just think that Rosa had a pretty good gloss to her message without saying the word communitarianism, which I dare anyone to say three times quickly. Let alone spell.
Right. Yeah, no, and if you go into other languages, communitarianism has even more syllables.
Oh, really?
So, you know, if you're looking in French or German, sustainable development documents, it's pretty much, I can see how people would be just baffled by the bullshit. And I think that... like, I just wanted to wrap it up. That was all, it was 10 years ago that we became aware of this, you know, this player, this person. And I just don't know, I don't know anything about her. We never had another conversation, like, ever again. past her telling me that my presence in California at her conference was just like I can't even tell you the vibes, you know, that I received, because they don't even, vibes don't really have words that are always appropriate for them. You're like looking in other languages for those type of words. I was gonna say, Knut, you know, you're shut in Freude, you've got your things that cannot be even expressed. And it's been a really long road. I guess as somebody who is in the almost 40 club, I'm an the generation I belong to. I don't know how old you are, but I'm an elder millennial.
I'm 54.
We're like,
but I
okay.
I love girls in their 30s.
Well, we're kind of nuts.
Okay, but
we straddle,
ooh, stony silence.
The world of the youth, you know.
Oh,
world of the youth is like they're all on memes. They're all on emojis. The other side of the generation, the older side of the generation, is the kids like me who were like on computers in the 80s and didn't necessarily take tech for granted because it was all so cutting edge. I think one of the things that we never really took as a message was the return to nature, because one of the only things that makes humans even comparable to any apex predator found in nature is our capacity to rationalize and reason and see ourselves, you know, bigger picture type things, more systems thinking, and that's connected to our use of technology.
Nordica,
of course,
can I just interrupt you for one sec? There's some breaking news here. I just want to play a quick clip. Take a listen to this. You might like this.
Okay.
Here we go.
There are reports that there is no evidence of a direct link between...
Can you hear that?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay, have a listen.
There are reports that there is no evidence of a direct link between Baghdad and some of these terrorist organizations.
There are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
Excuse me, but is this an unknown unknown?
I'm not.
Several unknowns, and I'm just wondering.
I'm not going to say which it is.
But Secretary,
I'm right here.
All right, rest in peace. Donald Rumsfeld died at the Chinese favorite number 88. That happened 5 hours ago. Sorry, that was just a slight interruption there. He is one of my favorite BS artists of all times. Defense minister. Defense secretary, 9/11, and man, nobody could see. You know, he's one of the people that could form a sentence and speak intelligently. So we're going to miss that generation because right now we're being run by their children, and they're not too smart. They're definitely not as smart as the people of Donald Rumsfeld's generation. So rest in peace, if it's true, Donnie Rumsfeld, 88. What a number.
You're right.
What a number.
Hey, maybe he's on the beach with Tupac and Biggie. You know?
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. Have you ever heard that clip before?
Uh-uh. I don't think so.
Oh, my God. That is the best clip I have ever heard of politics.
Some known unknowns. You know what it reminds me of?
Go ahead. It reminded
me of like borderline Monty Python.
Yeah.
You know how those guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bring us your dead. Bring us your dead.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go away or I shall turn to you.
Yeah, you got that. Oh, your mother got you watching Monty Python, eh? Interesting.
British humor, British comedies. I was like a pretty balanced kid. I had a mix of like social sports and then just like being a nerd.
Yeah.
There was a lot of nerd stuff that went on, which is, you know, obviously resulted in, you know, some just like I wouldn't even really know what to call our position. You know, I know what people call Rosa was few people referred to her as a talking head, which is you know, sort of like the use of that language implies that she really more joined, obviously, the visual confirmation of the media where you're on the Today Show. You know, there you are, you're promoting your book, and you've done it. You've done the right thing. And you can tell the people at the small publishing house in Alaska who've got, like, you know, three kids and they live off-grid on a homestead with no electric and no water, and you can tell them you haven't done as honest or commendable an effort as this, you know, suburbanite, California, urbane, highly professional, you know, polished presentation, you know, gal. So I just was like, it has to just stand. There's no way that we can claw ourselves out of this opposition. She is not alone. What galvanized in what I consider the alternative media was these different camps of people, and they had, you know, the different schools. That there's the Jesuits that teach their children that they are the benevolent communitarians that will run the world. These are highly educated people. There is a cult vibe to many of the communities that we've been exposed to through the work. A lot of people assume that our awareness in certain topics and our ability to move around certain topics and understanding, we've been accused of being shills just the same, but never like talking heads, because we're not, you know, in that, we're not trying to fill that format and really, you know, put ourselves out there like that. But shills, like everybody, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, they're looking for the one discrepancy or the one thing that's going to make them just be disgusted by you, because, you know, all this good information is set out there, but then they see that where you're trying to lead them, maybe astray, maybe omit some very important information. And so I guess just to wrap it up, I'm not going to say I think that Rosa ruined our message. Mm-hmm. I think that she diluted it and sort of stood in front of people so they couldn't see us. And that's just, it's search engine statistics. It's marketing. It's, you know, it's an investment. And the results pushed us way down. Now we're result 20 on Google pages rather than on the first page.
So you think she did more harm than good, or more good than harm, right? I'm not totally clear.
No clue.
Okay.
No clue how many people are aware of sustainable development without that deeper awareness. And the reason that I became so involved in my mom's work was because she was reaching people, and she always has, in her just raw, unedited, unfiltered information. A lot of people really like that. And what I tended to do as an editor or a co-author or however you want to put it, even a ghostwriter, is sort of just give it this plain talking American voice, even though I am very academic and interested in things on an academic level. I really try to distill that information, layman's terms, bring it back to maybe idiomatic things that people go, oh, you always maybe suspected, you know, where it's, so we tried to have plain spoken stuff woven in there. But really the goal was to make a handbook, make something that people could fold in half and put in their back pocket and take in and arm themselves with, you know, because the war looks different to everybody who starts being engaged. And just down to the lowliest, you know, you've got your indigenous tribes, they can't get clean water. You've got the gentrified urban neighborhoods. You've got the rural people who Homeland Security is now controlling everything, and they're concerned about their access to resources being managed by people that have shown no accountability, no transparency, and a predilection, you know, for corruption. So just arming people who are plain spoken and might not have these higher levels of education with just these basic tools to tell when they're, you know, being denied of basic rights to speak up,
In Nordica.
So that's really, yeah.
Do you think that Rosa Corre was hitting enough of an audience that maybe they made up a story to just get her off the world stage? Because one of the things we look into in Fakeologist is that a lot of public, prominent people that are getting a big following, like Rosa, are more of a danger to the system. And once they get enough of their message out, they just tell them to either take the silver or the lead kind of thing, the gold or the lead. Do you think that
You mean maybe just retire, like perhaps an early retirement?
Yeah, just say, hey, you know, you've done great, but really you are hitting too close to a nerve, and perhaps we don't really need people to know about Agenda 21 into the great depth that you're exposing it, and of course all the negative things, because I live in Toronto, which is definitely a strong / smart city, Agenda 21 on steroids. They're all on board up here, especially since they have the power. We have a more dictatorial system of government where it's a lot easier to ram this stuff through. And we're suffering because of that, I would say. We didn't vote for any of this. And I just think that Rosa Corre, for as much as she seems to have been in opposition to you guys, or you found her oppositional, she was definitely explaining things in terms that I can understand. And I think I'm a pretty intelligent guy, but I really do like it when I hear repetitive messages that are really hitting home, because I understand psychic driving and marketing, and I really appreciate when people repeat things that are really important and are really problematic. Mm-hmm. So she was really pretty good at it, I think. Not to take anything away from your research and your mother's research, but would you agree?
I agree. Mm-hmm. No, I do agree with that. And also, as somebody who studied, you know, technical writing and, you know, different forms of communication, that angle, that, you know, the suit, the respectable source of information, that's all great. That's actually, you know, it's all the boxes ticked. It's the book is short. It's under a certain number of pages.
You're talking about her book, right?
Accessible headings. Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, we combined the
older
documents.
She wrote in big words, too. Big font. I love big font.
Yeah, it's 300 plus pages, you know, but it was under 100 pages. Originally, 2020 Our Common Destiny was just a pamphlet. It was even like 90 pages.
Oh, you're
pages,
talking about your
even
book.
With the appendix.
Your book.
Yeah, when it was originally put out,
okay.
What we had and what we decided was necessary as a team, my mom and I, our joint effort, was she had originally written several drafts of, like, it could have been several different books, and they had names like Big Mother and Unsustainable Future, some, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Where we were,
is Big Mother a takeoff of Big Brother?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and it refers to the Pachamama. This sort of ancient goddess Sophia, embodiment of benevolent dictatorship, mm-hmm. Like, you know, anthropomorphizing the earth itself and being the elite group of people who claim to speak for Mother Earth herself, that type of stuff. So it was huge, and we had all these meandering topics, and it was like, you know, 500 page drafts. So we really whittled everything down in 2005 to when it became this more of a bite-sized chunk, and it was written as, like, you know, each chapter was only a few pages, the font was bigger, it was short, crisp sentences.
Did you have any pictures
trying
in
for
it?
That
I don't see any pictures in the book. I'm just scanning through it now.
There's no pictures. No, we had just short chunks of paragraphs.
If you reissued the book, would you put that cartoon of Rosa Corre that Chris did in there?
I'd probably put it on the back cover.
Oh, you put it on the back. Ooh, put it on the front. You'd sell a ton, but you'd probably get a lawsuit from her wife there. But it might not be the best.
Yeah, I have no desire to you know, I spit in your grave, but just on your memory. And there's a lot of people who are very angry for us
because
of what she did. And it didn't affect our ability to make money. We were affecting our own ability to make money.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Sort of on purpose.
Yeah, can you tell? Yeah, because that's one thing I wanted to ask you just based on your interview with the other guys at the Triangle there. What is communitarianism? And this question was asked in the chat by, I'll just give him credit, Don't be a dog's body. He asked, what are your thoughts about communitarianism? And are you living a communitarian life yourself in Alaska? Or are you living some sort of because your lifestyle seems like a sharing sort of open lifestyle, open house, whatever you're
saying.
Yes. I'm not saying it right.
On a personal level, when before we identified the dialectic Hegelian Marxist, perpetual revolution, before we discovered sort of like, we knew the existence of that stuff, but it was sort of just all, the puzzle hadn't been completely filled. So the identification with green environmentalism, obviously equal rights for men, for people of different races, this whole equality background, a lot of the activism, that this is how I started really reconciling, different people's life paths. I went to school with a lot of kids who are, they're just completely raised up in Marxist activism. And because our background was so American, like sort of republicanism, I rebelled against that, and so did my mother. So she sort of she identified as, she had libertarian leanings, yeah. She had socialist leanings, she was a little green, environmental. She did want to protect environments and watersheds. Yeah.
Is that from being in Seattle or Europe, or where did she get that from?
Well, up here, there's a lot of obviously really legitimate concerns for environmental conservation. Sure. We've had abuses such as nuclear testing.
Right.
We've had abuses such as, the categorical decimation of the Alaskan Native people.
Right.
If you look at our statistics for alcoholism, suicide, homelessness, mental health, the Alaskan Natives are just hurting so bad, and there is a solidly racist...
Is that worse than other Natives in North America, by the way? Alaska is Alaskan indigenous drug abuse, alcohol abuse worse than other jurisdictions in North America? Is it worse than Alaska?
We per capita, we don't have reservations. We do have villages. We don't have a reservation type of a society up here. And it's we're integrated, and per capita, Alaska has just the absolute worst crime statistics. The
really?
Missing and murdered indigenous women. Yeah, it's off the charts. It's really just, it's almost like a no man's land, Wild West sort of thing. And we don't necessarily, we don't push people towards any one, like, oh, go ahead and be an anarchist, because this is your answer. There's anarcho-libertarianism and things like that, which I think people, when they rabbit hole in all these isms and philosophies, they find that there's a lot of things that resonate, because what we've done is we're children, we are the next generation, and there's been generations of people before us who could create all these problems, and then they could come along and, like you said, control the opposition and become, the activists who are fighting for a better world. And with regard to, the lens that you put on things with the fakeology, that's just a great way to fake people, because it's like, oh my gosh, what a mess. These women are suffering, or these men this particular, group of people. And it's, you pull up the empathy and the desire to be connected to other human beings, the desire to kind of move outside your privilege. If you've got extra money, you want to send it in, you want to sponsor children in these underprivileged areas. I think that they just are absolute masters at grabbing a hold of what people want. You know, they want to care for others. So when you define communitarianism loosely, you can be like, oh, it's just caring for others in your community. Yeah. And a lot of people really take that at face value. And so if you present something called the anti-communitarian, you know, philosophy, it's not about hating everyone in your community. It's like just trying to get people out of that black, white, zero, one, that binary thinking of politics. I think that's one part of the gender debate that I find so fascinating, and I can't conclude anything yet, but I just feel like if people are talking about non-binary gender identity, then they can open their minds to non-binary political identity. And that's what we've been just chiseling at for years. So I think it just, you know, people do all kinds of different things, and there's different players. There's writers, there's researchers, there's people who run blogs. And I just think the more people who are involved, obviously the muddier, you know, the water gets, but it's great to like be able to say, I can stand by a message I came up with when I was about 17 years old.
Yeah.
And say, wow, it stood up. I can say 20 years later, I pretty much stand by it. My mom and I agree that we would not have written it the same if it was us doing it now. There's no way that we would even begin the sentences the same way that we did, which is fine. That is that's a time capsule of people who were genuinely involved in a learning process. And we shared our learning process. And I think that's what made a lot of people, you know, just say that was a very coherent way to, you know, explain why Rose's was insincere, because she sort of just jumped in at the deep end where we had really gone through our journey through the shallows, you know, until we realized that there was a drop off sort of a thing. And yeah. So that, like, you come in with your lineage, you announce, I'm a real estate appraiser. My parents were judges. I understand law, and I'm here to translate it for you in the best possible way. And I can see how that would work. And
yeah, well, she did a good job. I understood it perfectly, and it makes total sense. And it's happening all around me in Toronto. I don't know if it's happening where you live in Wasilla.
We're deeply entrenched. Everything that's happening everywhere in the world is mm-hmm. happening in Alaska. There's kind of a mystique to being up here. It's like maybe pictured that we don't even live in a city, and we do. We live in a very small, crappy city that's mostly highway.
You talking about Wasilla or Anchorage?
Wasilla. Yeah. And it's growing. It's one of the, over the last 10 years, I would say this is one of the fastest growing places in the States.
Do you think Sarah Palin helped put it on the map? She must have, huh? She must have.
Yeah, something like that. And then just the way I think rumors spread about, you know, jobs or opportunities. Mm-hmm. And really people don't understand that it's sort of like island life here. You've got your just random prices just jacked up in every direction. I think that really takes a lot of people by surprise, because they like live in places like Texas or, you know, Illinois or Arizona, and produce is so cheap. And they come here and they're like, I'm going to pay how much for like nothing?
Yeah. And, it's a long drive from California or Mexico, where the food comes from, all the way up to Alaska. I guess you got to go through British Columbia as well, all the way up. So it's a long way, unless maybe it comes.
We used to do it. Yeah. We used to do it from Fairbanks, Alaska to Phoenix, Arizona and back. Mm-hmm. It was one of our,
ooh, that'd be a hell of a drive.
Like clear your head. And get off this rock kind of a thing, because the island people who live in island communities, they kind of like get it. There's, you know, you got your scarcity, and then we have a lot of natural disasters and crap weather. We've got fires and earthquakes, and mm-hmm. so the community, that word is always sort of being tested. Mm-hmm. And the planning that Alaskan developers, the people in power, all the planning that they've done for emergency preparedness and disaster response and stuff, when it's put into practice, I think that you can really see how it falls short, and everything that is purporting to be for the community is actually just sort of to the benefit of the people who are writing the programs, and you can see the disingenuousness of it when these plans and programs and solutions are implemented. You can see that they're disingenuous because you can see the people on the ground level, the regular lower class people who fall through the cracks, who are forgotten, who resources, they're not available. So, you know, the limitations of this system, a communitarian bureaucracy offers like everything. It offers people freedom from fear is technically what it does. The platform is, you know, moving human society towards a place where people don't have to be afraid. And I think that is on a human, evolutionary, biological level. If they want to remove fear from the equation or any understanding of a threat, then that itself should be cause for alarm for people, because if you're a fully integrated human, you understand that your negative emotions, such as fear, traumatic memories that haunt you, your anger towards things, these are actually the parts of yourself that love yourself the most. And I think that we've demonized anger and we've demonized fear and we've just cast all these negative emotions, mistrust, you know, leaning towards conspiracies, not trusting the government, not trusting school or the police. So we demonize people's fear. We demonize their, you know, their innate ability to reason and, you know, take a inventory of their entire environment and how these people or animals or influences of any kind are making them feel. Your feelings are a great path to your rational decision-making process. So what we hoped to return to the formula was human nature itself. Fear, volatile, scary, shadow emotions, and allow that to guide you, you know, to like eventually, you know, integration and be at peace and harmony and understand that there's only so much you can do. There's only so much you can know. And yes, the anger, the revulsion, the disgust, being offended. How dare you treat us all like infantile, you know, whatevers.
I think you should have your own talk show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You could definitely
fill
an hour. Does your who gets more of a word in at the dinner table, you or your mother? Because I haven't really heard her talk too much on different shows.
She is I guess it's obvious that we're different generations.
Yeah.
Upbringings. Yeah. And we jive constantly. Like, we can't really go a day without checking in.
Oh, yeah?
Do you guys live on
the same property?
Yeah, we do. We bought property together a couple years ago.
Okay.
And we've been there ever since, the homestead. And, you know, just the choice to stay in Alaska. It happened before COVID. I was pretty interested in maybe going back down to the States and letting my kids experience other parts, you know, of the country. And we're still interested in that. And now that things are opening up and seem to be more like, you know, catering to the perception of our reality and the things that we were going to be able to do, you know, it seems to be doing the little circle of there are no normal. Okay. Just make sure you got a face shield. Alrighty.
Yeah. Like, how is COVID affecting you guys up there? Are you guys, I see Sarah Palin is playing the, I got a virus game. So, what's happening in, Alaska there? Is everyone all face diapered up or what's happening?
Wasilla is very red. So it's almost, it's the metric here is so different because you've got, you know, it is a combination, obviously. There's a lot of left-leaning types, but as far as, like, the mask mandate type of thing, there was a general intrinsic resistance coupled with the desire to make others feel safe. And I think people really did a lot of, in this community, in this town, and in the areas around us, there was a lot of, in the last year and a half, of just, like, looking at people right in their face and, where are you at? So I found COVID to be, like, on a psychosocial level of just, like, wow, people are relating to each other with just this massive, unspoken desire to understand and be understood, and, like, where are we coming from? Are we giving into our fear? Are we falling for this? You know, just that sort of the common person's, their plainest instincts of, I just feel like this is snake oil. You know, something ain't right. You know, consider the source. So without a lot of education, you know, the people out here, their choices are mocked, you know, they're definitely mocked and called, like, names, like, you don't care about people, etc. But the instinctive response to most of these business people in Wasilla is, we don't want our businesses closing. We don't want to cave to this. It's just sort of arbitrary. You know, I think people start really showing their true colors, that they are definitely smarter than anyone has ever given them credit for centuries. Honestly, I feel like on the ground level, you can look at people and they can be like, this is arbitrary. This is BS. And so many people approaching them based on education level or anything would just not even give them credit for the ability to see outside, you know. And so I guess that's what part of our system, if you could call it a system, of unlearning is, like, you know, learning to show yourself some grace. If you had a stomach ache or a headache, or there was something that just made you feel, like, gross, you know, I think a lot of people just, like, they don't know how to describe their feeling. And that's something in you that they're literally trying to eliminate through an evolutionary process. I firmly believe that. I firmly believe that if you take the material world and the academic world and all the, you know, the information and converting knowledge into meme format, mind viruses, you know, COVID vaccinations modifying RNA, the introduction of artificial intelligence alongside this human evolution, I think that, like, when you crack it open and you start on your own individual journey, it really doesn't even matter if you have a sixth grade education. I feel like those plainest instincts, the fear, the anger, the revulsion, those things guide us. You're integrated. You're gonna have your breakthroughs and hopefully find your tribe. People who, you know, just will respect you, where you're good enough, where, you know, the walls fall down, the usual norms and status quos fall away, and all that's left, you know, is your character, your truth that you stood in, your community that you stood up for in the true spirit of community, you know, brotherhood, sharing. I wouldn't say we do a ton of sharing anymore. We used to have a way more open lifestyle, but doing these kind of things make you more just wary of people in general, and just knowing your value. So you create kind of an ivory tower. I would encourage anyone who, you know, starts to mistrust people to really take heed and create an ivory tower for yourself, to protect your peace and to protect your assets and your investment in your family. You know, put up walls, but also be open.
Or a big fence.
Blessings come in all kinds of forms. You know, blessings come in all kinds of forms. Like, oddly, Rosa Corey and her efforts were this strange blessing to us, because if you say that, you know, bringing people to our work and bringing attention to the work that we did, if you think that that's a good thing, which
well, I would have never found you guys without her. There's no doubt about it. So, and
right.
now that
so,
she's off the world stage, is it time for you guys to step up?
That's a great question, and I'm not prepared to answer
it's
it.
My first great question of the night.
And what would that entail? You know, a book tour, a speaking tour. These are the types of things that
I think you can handle it. You got the gift of the gab, that's for sure.
Oh, that's funny. That's what a friend of ours who's in Ireland said. He said, you must have kissed something about
the Blarney Stone.
The Blarney
Stone. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I really have been looking at Irish real estate off the coast of Blarney. And he's like, well, you seem to have kissed the Blarney Stone.
Yeah, there
and
you
I
go.
Didn't know the
How does your husband keep up with you?
That.
Is he is on the same page as you?
I'm separated.
Oh, okay. Because
yeah.
you have a few.
So I'm single.
Okay.
Well, you... So I have time for this. No,
oh.
it would probably be really great and bring a great balance to my life if I had sort of, you know, everyone needs an editor.
Yeah,
so
I'm
I've been my mom's editor for a while. Who edits me? Well, actually, I would say that my children are older now. My two oldest children are 10 and 13, and their awareness of these subjects is actually
yeah.
kind of scary.
Was that
and
right?
they have a great, you know, lens. Like, this is all new to them. They don't know any other world but the world that, you know, their mom's given them. And
mm-hmm.
they just, they kind of look at me like, you know, how everybody sort of sees you how they see you, and they kind of look at me like an annoying teenage older sister because
wow.
my mom is so closely involved in our family. And I'm like, I'll say things like, I am an internationally recognized political scientist.
There you are. What
you
is
know,
your
like,
do you get along
which,
with your dad?
Which is it sounds funny when you say it, but when I'm
yeah.
arguing with my kids and
yeah.
they're turning into the little They're turning into little lawyers.
I'm sure.
You know.
Do you get along with your dad? Your father?
I stopped speaking with my dad about 10 years ago.
Oh, dear.
Largely, I think that the work that we were involved in had quite a bit to do with, like, any... I have quite a few family members that I'm estranged from, and we're just not involved personally in each other's lives. And the publishing that we started doing when I was like 13 when we really started becoming involved. We were looking at 99. Yeah, I was like 14. And, you know, within 3 years we had published the thesis online, and I was using my web design capabilities to, you know, broadcast our message, because at the time my intention was to put out as strong a signal as possible. And my family's reaction, extended family, or even my closer siblings, was a lot. A lot of people's what they end up experiencing when they do anything.
Yeah.
It's like the walls come down, and that's fine. I obviously like I just without being a toxic positive person, like a new age, like all is light type person. I just really want to wish people the best. If they decide they don't need you in their life, that's a pretty strong statement, and you kind of just kind of like laugh, like, all right, my heart is completely broken, but life goes on, and you try to get comfortable in your little new identities. Like, now I'm not my beloved sister's sister, I'm an internationally recognized political scientist. Great. You know, trade one title for another. And
Are
when
you,
all the,
so
the
you,
House of Cards
So did you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I'm the oldest out of 7 kids.
Whoa!
Several different marriages. Yeah, oh. And I'm the oldest, and so I think oldest children out of large groups of children that came out of like
you become
you know,
a mother figure.
Like the '70s and eighties.
Yeah, you become.
Yeah, I helped raise those kids, so they're sort of an indignance. Like, all right then.
Oh wow! So your mother had a few husbands. Is that what you're saying?
She was married twice, and my dad remarried twice.
Oh, wow.
And my stepmom remarried twice. Like, you know,
it's
definitely a modern dysfunctional family. So
is there any way you could have all got together into a kibbutz-like setup, like a real communitarianism?
Oh, my goodness, no. There is absolutely, I don't know how much you subscribe to the theory of the narcissist-empath relationship dynamic.
Right.
I don't know how much you've, like, read about that. The narcopathy in modern, like, you know, psychiatry understanding of personality disorders is just this, like, odd, you know, I don't know how much you've read about, like, the Aquarian theories about, like, the starseed people. There's the starseed, the indigo, the highly sensitive person.
That's news to me.
Things like that. Well, I don't know. It's just like it crosses over into the understanding of like gifted children, gifted autistic children.
Were you in the gifted program?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I could tell.
Gifted program, ground floor, the first ones that they had in my town, in my elementary school.
What, in Seattle?
They were. Actually, I went to elementary school in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Okay.
And then down in the States for years. So it was like 10 years in Alaska.
Are gifted and autistic in the same spectrum, do you think?
I think that the graph is 360 degrees and in five dimensions with people. Because I've observed some of the most successful people. They have money. They're in, you know, high positions of like maybe like even generals. You know, you're talking about your doctors who own hospitals, multimillionaires.
Really?
These people, by all estimation, in modern, you know, quantifiable terms, are a great success, highly intelligent. They've received degrees. Their families all still speak to them. They have exerted control over their environment. They are powerful world builders. They are manipulative of their own existence, you know, to this degree where people call that success. And I've observed those people be about as sociopathic and emotionally retarded as a person probably could ever express. And then you look at an autistic child who's like, you know, let's say they're like 8 years old or they're 15 years old and they're still in diapers. But they care so deeply about the people around them. Their whole life is, you know, from one person to another, and they're programmed by their caregivers, their families, their siblings, who a lot of their siblings are not autistic, and they're being taught to care about others, even though they probably might not even ever get out of diapers. They're not going to ever own a multinational company. They're probably not even going to drive a car. But in my estimation, these are expressions of the greatest intelligence that you can show. That's not about money. That's not about your fakeologist, you know, the stage that you set, your scene that you set, the dialogue that you manipulate so that you are this character. You know, so like I say, when the House of Cards falls, you know, there's a lot of people out there who can meet their asses hanging out. They've made great money. They are highly intelligent, but they really missed something. And that's where you get the rabbit hole divers, because they don't want to feel like they're missing something.
Do you think autism is caused by quaxines?
I am technically what I would call a vaccine injured person. I didn't receive them much throughout my early life because my mom was just sort of, she grew up Army, so she received probably like 400 vaccinations.
Oh, really?
Just, like international travel, you know, in the 60s. I just imagine the 18 different needles. Like, the vaccine schedule for civilians, vastly different for the vaccine schedule for Army personnel and their family members. So her upbringing caused her to be very just borderline traumatized and hyper aware of just she didn't want me to be harmed by these cocktails of injections.
Oh, wow. Good for her.
She never really called them vaccines. Yeah, and so it was that intuitive thing. And so when I was 15, I traveled on exchange to France as part of a school trip. And I willingly just went in and got everything that they recommended that I do. And I spent the next several years sick to death, going blind, developing allergies, massive weight gain and water retention. I had like migraines, nosebleeds. And then there's also probably environmental toxins. Seattle's a very moldy place in general, and homes in Seattle don't get maintenance, and they really sweat. And Alaska has a big problem with this as well, is so much moisture and condensation, and people don't know how to build for these extremely muggy or extremely wet or cold climates. So I just, environmental toxins, mold, coal dust, and I believe that it was a combination, like whammy effect on my system. And I think moving to a more arid climate like Alaska really helped me battle sort of all those things, like get my vision back to almost perfect vision after, you know, going blind. But like a steadily downhill reaction, just negative reaction after negative reaction. And obviously no, there's no, in the 90s and the early 2000s, vaccine injuries were so just like out there. It was in the realm of like fake moon type of stuff. So it wasn't like I was able to just be like, this stuff made me sick and have any sort of recourse. There was nothing. And it took me years as a gaslighted, you know, person who's just been faked out my whole life to realize that that sequence of events and the also Diet Cola had a profound effect on my health. I drank a lot of it as a kid because I had a diabetic grandma, and it was the only thing she kept around. So every time I would drink a can of Diet Pepsi or Diet Root Beer or Diet anything that had the NutraSweet.
Yeah, poison, yes. Toxic.
And it's total neurotoxin.
Sure.
So the migraine, sensitivity to light.
I think it fries your liver, too.
Yeah, and all the things, the hydrogenated vegetable oil, just the millions of cascade of things. It takes people, and it took us years to just even know what we were feeling or thinking or going through, like that whole time. Just how can you actually be in such a fog your whole life where you're just blindingly accepting medications that don't even have, you know, any kind of long-term clinical trials. They're just slamming it out there. And there's so much money. So that adage, follow the money, that obviously helps people follow. If you've got a health problem or you've got a town that's been polluted, that is a huge motivator for people, is looking around and seeing their loved ones, you know, develop cancer and say, this isn't normal. Our drinking water should be, you know, we have a right to this. So I guess establishing, you know, people's our boundaries as peoples. What are our boundaries with other humans? Are we going to let them baffle us with the BS so that we don't even know what our own boundaries are, so that we don't even know why we're feeling sick, where we would even gaslight ourselves and deny our own reality and our own rational understanding of, I injected this into my body and then this happened to me for the next 5 years until I was able to detox from that. And I think one of the only things that probably saved me was, in a weird way, poverty, being a young adult and having to actually work for a living and traveling to different towns and, you know, going without food. There's something to be said, the health benefits of fasting, something that Americans don't really participate. Like, you know, the average USA person is not going to fast unless they're on a health regimen of some kind. It's not culturally part of what we do. So I think I was able to actually get out of a fog of several years. And, you know, our health complications, our religious backgrounds, the town we live in, our family backgrounds, all these things are just these crazy amount of details, you know, of that create our makeup of our individuality and what leads us to these things. I'll never stop being fascinated by it because, you know, people have always been interesting to me, and I've never really liked to do the whole people are dumb thing. I like to do the whole people have accepted this presentation. they received this image with this words on top of it, and that was it. That was all the presentation they needed. They really enjoyed it. It validated their a couple core beliefs that they had, and you know, move on. So in studying how to present our work, I really did study the propagandists A to Z, top to bottom, inside and out. I looked at propaganda from 1,000 years ago, practically, which is obviously would be the religious texts and, you know, edicts of certain eras. And
hey, Nordica, so can I ask you, how did you get your name Nordica? What does that mean? Is that
it was out of a baby name book. It's like an Italian word, you know, a Germanic word, just
okay,
meaning of the north. It
yeah,
just refers
that.
To like, you know, the north.
It's very unique. I like it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's used a lot around the world. Like, there's a Hotel Nordica. I think it's one of the Hilton chain. There's a Hotel Nordica in Reykjavik, Iceland.
Okay.
And a brand of ski equipment.
Right. Yeah, I think I have their cross-country skis like that, Nordic something. What?
And I've been asked if it's even my real name a lot because of people obviously use stage names and pen names so much. And like, no way. Like, if it was me, I'd be Jill Jones.
Jill Jones, yeah.
Like, I'm a little anonymity, please.
JJ. What? We got about 15 minutes left. I want to talk about COVIDs right now. And what's your take on it? What do you think is happening in the world? Will it bring in communitarianism? Is this what we're getting? What's your take on the vaccination? Will you get it? Will you get your children to take it? What do you think is going to happen in the next 10 years? Let's also talk about, real quick, how you guys nailed 2020 and where you came up with 2020 way back in 2000 and 2001. How did you come up with 2020? Let's try and hit all those points in the last 15 if we can.
Okay, yeah. Let's start with you've been saying COVIDs.
Do I call it COVIDs?
I think that's pretty astute. I guess my awareness of the fields of microbiology and virology began, let's say it started in a not real place. Let's say it started with a novel by Michael Crichton called Congo.
Right, Congo, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then also he has a couple other really great ones. They're not always about a virus or anything like that. And then it's sort of the interest that I had in, it was sort of just to anything revolving around death in general. As a kid, I was like exposed to Alaskan culture, which is there's a lot of crime. We have a lot of missing people. We have small towns where it's only a few families, really, if you think about it, in terms of like compared to really, really densely populated areas, it's just us. And so when these things happen, they really rock these communities, and there's just this sort of underlying, like, there's a disease in our culture of people who just want to harm others. And a lot of people don't ever get to the point where that has a name. And I believed that it had a name really early on, and my little path, I was like, obviously, a sixth grader, seventh grader. I was very interested in these topics like, you know, disease outbreaks and containment and how, you know, how the military works with civilian and secular agencies, as well as like the Catholic Church, like with the Belgian Catholic presence in the Congo. And there was a lot of red flags early on, because the official stories that were coming out about these, you know, this epidemiology, this modern field, modern virology, modern epidemiology, and the coming plague. I just started like, all my heroes kind of across the board were sort of taken away from me, because great deeper inquiry into them showed that they were just sort of awarded these prizes for their journalism, because they were just repeating the press releases from these organizations, and like Ebola, Marburg virus, the toxic shock syndrome epidemic that started when the when tampons became widely available.
Oh yeah, toxic shock. Yeah, I've never heard I've never heard anyone get to the bottom of that one. Did anyone ever figure out what the real story is?
It's still a thing. I was really that my interest in that when I was younger. That actually, I was starting to read about that before I even had my cycle, as you know. So like, I wasn't interested in tampons as a product. Like, I has been like dissuaded, you know, just because I was really interested. My original interest in like a career was likely medicine, and I was pushed to that and just had a great interest in it. And so the red flags that started popping up were like with regards to HIV AIDS. When I was a kid, I actually had gay uncles, you know, like I'd come out of Alaska, and sort of the gay community in America is a lot, they're jovial, you know, they've got great party spots, and they're just, you know, fun. And Alaska can be a depressing place. So I associated and still do associate the queer community with joy of sort of coming out of like an abusive lifestyle where the society is abusive and negative towards women and towards Black people and Indigenous people and Hispanics. A lot of hatred, a lot of systemic racism. So I was very depressed about that because I am Native American and Jewish. And so I was like, this is not really my world. So that dissonance started really, really young. And I never accepted any information practically at face value. And with regards to HIV AIDS and Ebola and they got the market cornered on fear of these things. They truly do. It begins in the literature and the TV and the film, and these concepts being introduced and these plot lines being played out in these scenarios. And most people in their rabbit hole journey come along a concept called predictive programming, where you tell people what's going to happen to them and then you do it to them. Mm-hmm. And then they go, oh, of course, well, this is my reality. I've been told, you know, it's practically scripted. So we're receiving these concepts and these memes and these mind viruses at all times, you know, reaffirming our understanding. Science is science. Scientists are scientific. The end. Next novel. And that we are not the scientists. And unless we have been invited to these particular galas and benefits and soirees and university, you know, awards dinners, unless we have been given these, you know, awards for journalism, we are not these journalists and we are not these scientists. So I had already been told that I was not good enough forever. So it was kind of like, oh, once again, not good enough. So I just kept digging. And while my mom was on a crash course, total fast track to communitarian law and, you know, international law and this global reset and these global initiatives, I was looking at health very closely because I was feeling like I was being deceived. And HIV AIDS was a big issue because I actually knew people personally who'd been affected by it. And I am not really sure what the day was when it just hit me. It dawned on me. My bubble burst. A part of me died. My inner child cried. And I went, it's not real. They took the queer community, who was already had mental health issues due to just being gay itself and being rejected by society itself, and then you add drug addiction, you add sexual abuse, and these cycles of abuse of self and others, and malnutrition, and just, you know, like, just all these other health factors, and then ascribing it to this virus that they literally are never isolating the virus. They're isolating a protein in human blood, which they say indicates the presence of a virus. That right there, I threw the book down. I threw it down. I was 13. I was in seventh grade. And I pretty much had to go, you know, the rest of my life sort of with just this nodding and smiling and agreeing with people just so that I could get to the end of my day. So that wasn't a hill I chose to die on in 1998, but it was definitely there. And, you know, that understanding of, I think that was my great unfaking. A big unveil was, it was Dr. Peter Duisberg. Yeah, Duisberg. And
yeah, Duisberg.
I mean, obviously, there's varying degrees of HIV is blah, blah, blah. Some people say the virus is real, but that they just used it. And then there's all these different camps. I'm of the camp that is just that this is movie magic. And they did a really terrible thing, deceiving the queer community. And now we've got this whole culture of nonprofit organizations, which are in place, you know, to benefit the gay community and those affected by HIV AIDS, even if they're not part of the gay community. It's just like to keep people from falling through the cracks. So I started observing that create this giant problem and then implement themselves as the solution, and then it just that reiterates like on a small scale between individual people and on a large scale the way that countries and nations and regions deal with each other is this just on almost every level. And that level of deception is, you know, a lot of people from a religious background, they can believe it because the Bible told them that Satan was the great deceiver. So in a way, there's a lot of Christians who are way better off. They're more armed with the ability to see the threat and the deception. I would never call myself a Christian, but I grew up Christian, and I respect that, you know, that background and that that lens to view things, because whatever you call it, the deception exists and it persists. And if you just ask a little girl that's 12 years old that is reading books that are way too big and concepts that are over her head, you know, she hasn't even reached sexual maturity, but she's like, this ain't even real. And so I really, I'm glad that I was raised to trust myself. Yeah. And
you were a smart cookie others. Even back then. Wow. Very smart.
Well, yeah, I mean, and so now with the implementation of this, I would expect to be burned at the stake. I've maintained a lot of friendships in my life, as a kid, as a teenager, as an adult, where I don't hide from it, and I'll say exactly where I come from and what I believe and the things that have happened to me, and just let the chips fall where they may. And there's a lot of people who have vastly different opinions than me. They're people who received the vaccine, who, you know, will comply and do, and they see the value in that, but they also see the value in what I'm doing, the way I'm doing it. So I think that extending grace to others and allowing them to have their totally wrong opinions, you know what I mean? You know how it goes. And just, I wouldn't say I've bitten my tongue. I say I just hold space for others and allow them to either arrive at similar conclusions than me or not. Like, I just literally never need them to, you know, in the whole range of questionable narratives, starting with the COVID. I believe it was the perfect, you know, excuse to do the great reset to implement the new normal. How we arrived at 2020 is based on the documents, the hundreds and hundreds of documents that we started reading and realizing we're all basically the same document, that they had a format, they had an agenda, and these couldn't have all been naturally, you know, derived from what the community wanted. You know, maybe they customize it. They mad-libbed it. You know, they mad-lib it so that it matches the challenges or goals of a particular region. Like, if you've got a region that wants to do tourism, it's a tourism plan. So they're couching all these, you know, necessary marketing regional marketing and branding plans and whatnot. It's all, it's just like, they'll just casually mention that they want to make an area less dependent on automobiles. You know, what in the hell does that mean? It ends up meaning that they're going to make this place so inaccessible. And they're going to, you know, put a certain type of business out of business, and they are identifying barriers to a sustainable city, to a smart city, and basically anybody who's not already on their team is a barrier. Sure, but most of the people who haven't even heard of it. So to be a voice, you know, for the voiceless, to represent the unrepresented, that was really sort of our goal until the spotlight actually shone on us and we went, ah, like, oh, you guys are really going to need to do this for yourselves. We are not here to give you your pamphlet that's going to tell you to go put on the robe. You know what I mean? Like, go put on the robe and await heaven's gate. Like, there is just, obviously the early days of the internet, I was exposed to some really great stories, like, you know, CIA drug trafficking and cult, you know, the rise of cult activity in America, especially, you know, these charismatic leaders that come out of nowhere and just like take people's trust funds or their savings, you know, and just wild, like, people really are looking for their personal Jesus. So the disinclination to be a savior or a guru or a, you know, of any kind, you know, that's why we just sort of reiterate, we're just humble, you know, we just sort of read too much, educated beyond our class, you know, we really hide that in jokes. And I would say I probably have legitimately experienced imposter syndrome just because I was raised to disbelieve in my own greatness, even if I were to achieve it, if that makes any sense. You know, as a girl, first of all, as a working class girl, a poor girl, there's really only a couple options for poor girls, and I don't think we even need to tell people what those are. Mm-hmm. So just this the belief in the accomplishment was suspended to where I've probably gone days, weeks, months, years without even fully believing that I was able to, you know, accomplish these things. You know, with my mom, like, hand in hand, we were just like, we can really help a couple people. We don't know what the ultimate goal is. It's not to be standing at a podium with a crowd of people. You know, that's just absolutely terrifying. Nobody in their right mind wants that kind of influence over others in a mob mentality kind of way, where you just shout one word and they all go. You know, there's a very realistic, humble, honed, grandmotherly aspect where you just, that's not your role. That's not your place. Something about it ain't right, and to shy away from it. And so we can be insulted for not promoting our work. We can also say the fear of being misunderstood, of our intentions being misunderstood, you know, consider, you know, the world arena and what you've got your, the interest in true crime recently, people's interest in bizarre crime stories and unsolved mysteries and stuff like that. I've always joked that the category of our book should be, we should take it out of political science and philosophy and just put it in true crime, you know, to simplify things, I guess, so that people could even maybe put that lens on it so that they could suspend their disbelief a little bit and just listen to it as a story of how these extremely charismatic, marvelously skilled people were able to get away with so much crime, you know, repeatedly, you know, type of thing. So I think that maybe, looking back, if I was going to do anything different, that's probably the angle that I would have taken, because it's also very marketable. It's a sensationalist type of thing, like, oh, this crime's perpetrated, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's your best British accent there. I like that.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, who knows what like darkness lurks in the hearts of men, the shadow knows, that old-timey, you know, drama radio stuff. I really did love that stuff as a kid, but we seemed to drop it with our work because of the fear of being, you know, misunderstood. We're not trying to dramatize this. We're not trying to sensationalize this. It's a true psychological horror, and it can be understated because the horror of it is not in the apparent threat. It's not in any visual confirmation that you can get of a monster or a boogeyman. It's literally the closest and dearest things to you who are, you know, like I said, they're marvelously skilled at playing you and making you doubt your own sanity and making you doubt your own perception of reality. So I think there was a couple of things that just really helped me get to that point in my life where I could just see these things as masterworks. You know, you can see the whole new COVIDian nation, one world that we've got here. It's a masterwork. I mean, if you don't acknowledge the greatness, then you're really missing the point. It's people start hacking away at it immediately as well. You know, that this is it's evil, it's pure evil, and I think that it is has evil aspects to it, but they really use the good in people as well at the same time. The communitarians aren't outright asking people to be the most evil people that they can be. They are saying, be the best person, you know, bring your best self and join the community, and we'll make the community the best possible place because, you know, we're fostering growth, and that this is holistic. So labeling themselves as the holistic alternative to corporatist, individualist, narcopathic, you know, abusive. So they could just say, look, those are the abusers over there, you know, join us, we've done so well. And they pat themselves on the back. And if we can just be one little voice against that, and that definitely includes the COVID compliance, creating COVID smart communities. You know, half the schools in America that are open have got big vinyl banners, you know, $1,500 banner that says we are a COVID smart community. And, you know, what exactly are they advertising there? Well, that is communitarian values. That is communitarian law. That is a communitarian socioeconomic system being overlaid on top of, you know, your original system. And we don't defend, you know, the ghettos of America. We don't defend the poverty. We're not saying that things are amazing as they were. We're saying that they created the problem originally, and they're offering themselves as a solution. And these untouchable fields of like virology and the dogmatic scientific, you know, like just, oh, don't even try. You cannot sit at the same table as these people. That cognitive dissonance, you know, that people subscribe to that. They really do. They tell their kids, you can be anything you want to be except for a scientist that questions the narrative.
Exactly. Yeah, that's for sure. So are you going to be able to keep your children away from the vaccination?
Well, I've already had that, obviously, conversation with our pediatrician. Mm. And what I always do is explain my background as I was injured from vaccinations. So I start the conversation that way. And they go, well, obviously, we're going to have to talk about this later on. And what that means is if they want to make that sale, then yes, they're going to have to bring it up to me again. But I just try to tell them that I'm not that kind of customer. Wow. And leave it at that. I've had a lot of years to trial and error with people and either put myself out there or not. And I don't like to be, I don't like to hide who I am at all. But also don't like to alienate people without a really good reason. Like, I've really leveled up from the resentment that I felt, the desire to be understood by everybody. I'm really glad that I've gotten away from that. And I'm able to just have conversations with people where I feel like people can probably be proud that they are becoming more respectful of one another by, you know, saying things like, whatever makes you feel safe. If not being vaccinated makes you feel safe, then I support that. And if being vaccinated makes you feel safe, then I support that. You know, sort of just telling people that they have the right to read the literature and make the decisions, and that we actually have the right to come to different conclusions. And it doesn't mean we got to block each other on the internet or never talk to each other again. The concern over the shedding and stuff like that is where it starts to take on a more of a horrific sci-fi, like turning people against each other. I think it's horrifying if it is real and very sad. And I think to purposefully sicken people when they were otherwise healthy or maintaining, you know, their healthiest that they can be, I think that's horrific. And it's Munchausen's by proxy on a large scale. And right. I've had people criticize my using Munchausen's to describe the implementation of, you know, the COVID smart protocols as if this is just a natural evolution of, you know, human evolutionary biology and epidemiology. And they just have no idea that my background is just so, like, I've just been following this for so long.
Do you think epidemiology is a real science?
I think that there is, at the bottom of everything, that there is the real science. And I think that it's more of a unifier than it is. I'm one of the people that actually believes in animal intelligence. And I'm also a spiritual believer to the degree that I believe that you can imbue machines with spiritual activity, which is controversial. I don't need anyone to agree with me or believe that alongside me. It's just part of it. I'm a human. I've been using technology since I could reach my arms out. And that's my beliefs. And so I think that when you lie to people and you create these negative energy fields by the deception, by the decisions that they're making are not truly free will, because they're sort of just like, obviously, you could say we're in our little rat world. We're in our rat maze. We've got our little watering spigot. We've got our little food dish and our running tracks. And we don't leave that. You know, and even if it isn't physical, it's a cage of the mind. So just trying to tell everybody, like, you're, you know, be self-aware, little rat, you know, like, because, like, I don't mean to dehumanize, people at all by saying that we have an animal intelligence. I think that's probably the closest thing that there can be to, a philosopher's stone for us, for each individual, is looking inside and realizing that you have just as much of a right to dig out a burrow and define the boundaries of your existence as any, you know, badger out there. And then bring a full circle. You're capable of, you know, acknowledging your own divinity. And then you can see that, hopefully, and extend that grace to the rest of humankind. And, you know, the suggestion that there's alien DNA, a race of sort of shepherds where we're sort of the sheep, humans are meat. I think it's very dehumanizing and upsetting, and it's easily dissuades people from pursuing greatness. I think putting in terms of, like, we're food, or that we're part of a genetic experiment that's 500,000 years old, or all the other various things that you can do to make people feel small. I thought it was great when you said that you were just like little Tommy Who shouting out from his little radio station.
Yeah, exactly. That was my opening. Yeah. Who, I was just great. A Who in Whoville.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Just smallness. Yeah. So just, I guess, like, when you're a little person and you do, you know, big things, there's a parable in there, there's an archetype in there, and I always try to encourage people that I talk to, you know, personally or professionally or mentor in any way, like, just, that's your little, you know, your little torch, you know, and don't be dissuaded from it, because some people stumble into greatness, and this information, it's not, you know, it's not easy. I think people digest it in chunks. It takes years at a time. We're all, you know, in the stream of it. So it's, I think COVID sort of, like, I would say the passing of Rosa Corey and the attention that people started giving these concepts, like, it's, you know, there's a benefit, there's a silver lining. And I just think that if people are aware that they have health, you know, and it might help them get out of that dynamic of large scale Munchausen's where you're told you're sick or you're going to be sick, and this fear is implanted. And then the communitarians can say, we've redesigned society so that you don't have to suffer this fear. You know, just that narrative, that parable. I try to encourage people to romanticize your life a little bit. You are the main character in your film. You're constantly making your arcs. You've got you make progress. You have setbacks. And we're all arriving at different, you know, plot points at different times. The plot twist in ours was that Rosa Corey passed, and interest in our work was, you know, given kind of the bellows. It was a little ember laying there glowing, and it's been given the bellows.
Just a, I'm just looking on Rosa's site quickly. For all fakeologists, we look for a hoax code in some of the messaging we get from the powers that be. And apparently,
like a number arrangements.
You got that right. The little numerology. One of their favorite numbers in hoax codes is 11 or multiples of 11. And here we go. Yep. Rosa Corey passed away May 31st, 2021, just 11 days after she was admitted to Kaiser Hospital in Santa Rosa due to difficulty breathing. She tested negative for COVID-19. A CAT scan showed that she was suffering from a pulmonary embolism and revealed metastatic lung cancer, a big surprise. She had recently returned from a long stay in her favorite place in Mexico, where she lived part-time for many years. She was so full of life.
Island.
Her sudden passing came as a shock to both friends and family. So there's your 11. 11 is definitely hoax code. So maybe it was...
in that language... speaking that language, seeing coded messages, I think there's so much of that in, you know, literature and art, commercial art, mainstream movies, even independent movies that do a really great job, like psychological thrillers, like Memento, that are like less, people don't watch those movies as much. But they're still part of, you know, the human psyche, where we sort of acknowledge the weakness of our own mind, the limitations of our own mind, our vulnerability to manipulation. I think people are really fascinated by that in the context of psychological thrillers and horrors, and, you know, borderline, like, suspense, you know, their whole world as they knew it was about to come crashing down, you know, like... epistemologically, it's the reiteration and the iteration, and that practically predicting that this is what people are going to do. Like you reiterate these concepts enough, and you tell these people this is who you are, and they will, by the millions, slap those labels on themselves. Like with the crack cocaine epidemic in America, that was not a naturally derived epidemic at all. And it had a profound effect on our society and changed the face of psychology and like awareness of mental health. Suddenly addiction and these street drugs were causing schizophrenia in millions of people and potentially passing schizophrenia down the generations by consuming this crack cocaine or even just regular cocaine that was being produced in these time frames by, you know, these producers. So installed a million schizophrenic programs in people's minds who are so vulnerable you know, we're very impressionable. They show through scientific study that you can brainwash somebody super easily within like a day, practically, just with the right techniques. And just, you know, the horror of that, that we're one kidnapping away from not even knowing who we are. And I think that the veil being removed is just the understanding that that big cinematic plot device event, the kidnapping or the big reveal of the government conspiracy, it's not even necessary. It's being iterated every day on people, from the top down, just our adherence to these symbols and taking them for granted and hearing the number 11 repeated in these certain ways. So to just like, you know, help people get out of the mindset that the where you come from and the way you view things is not necessarily the way that everybody's going to. And you've got something as simple as a hand gesture, somebody waving their hand and parting their fingers a certain way. And you realize these are like the Vulcan salute, and that it goes back to, you know, you've got the Medici royalty, you've got, English, you've got the monarchs going back, you know, 500 to 1,000 years, and they're all in their paintings doing the Vulcan salute. So just the constantly overlapping, like, it's a very intricate tapestry. I find history to be super fascinating because I felt instinctively that modernity was a lie. Really early on in my life, with no real evidence to back it up, I just kind of looked at people and I didn't see their modern clothing and I didn't hear their modern vernacular. I just sort of saw their actions and their behaviors as these expressions that were just as medieval as anything. We're like, regardless of our modern technology, we've all got internet, we're flying on airplanes, we got cell phones, you know, and everything's very crisp, you know, Hanes her way. Everything's out of a package, it's shiny, so here we are, we're modern. And I just realized that the modernity is just putting that plastic around it. This is a textile that's been around for time immemorial, and we're just this tiny little thread woven through. And if we break out of that, if we stop thinking of ourselves as modern people on this linear track to modern times, we're a future society, a future global society. And that was sort of the motivation for naming 2020. What we did was, because it was the early 2000s, so we really wanted people to be like, oh, 2020, that's the future. That is so far off. In 20 years, what do we have? Flying cars, no highways, everything's just, where the world has been polluted so much, there was a giant flood, you know, people had all these really dramatic scenarios for what 2020 would look like. And I think that what ended up happening was quite dramatic. Not like cinematic, you know, the devastation, half a continent wiped away or anything like that, but half a continent of normalcy was wiped away from people's daily lives. And this initiation, indoctrination into these patterns, these codes, the compliance, you know, you see the word COVID, you see the number 19, and you are compliant. That's all it took, was just a few lines, one of them curved, one in the shape of a circle, one looking like a ravine of some kind. You've got like, if you're one of the people who looks at like modern American English in terms of like human evolutionary psychology, just our dependence on visual information, people's they're just totally disinclined to reading anything more than like a couple lines at a time. That's, I believe that they're actually like, you know, I loathe to use the term, but they're breeding, you know, these abilities out of people while breeding different abilities in. And so it depends on your value system. If you value critical thinking, you're going to value so many people regardless of if you agree with their conclusions. So what we have is like everything's turned on its head. We have our idiocracy. We've got compliance is valued. Diligent research of things that support the narrative only that's valued. You know, so I see that I could be devalued a million ways by people unless I find a way to value myself. And, you know, that's what makes it a healing journey, because this information and these rabbit holes create wounds in people, people who are feeling disgusted and hurt for others, even if things aren't directly hurting them or affecting them, they're hurt for others. So, you know, that path, looking at your own humanity, it'll help you, you know, look at others and understand their struggle, whether or not you, like, agree with them at all. I think the great Christianity, Western world versus the Middle Eastern, Arabic-speaking world, the Islamic world, there are more similarities to the two religions than differences in my conception, and I just always am trying to encourage people to keep an open mind and just befriend somebody who's from the polar opposite life path from you, because there's our authenticity, there's our greatness, there's our, each of us can and should, you know, appreciate ourselves and value ourselves and think, all right, I'm a living legend. I did a few things, you know, I'm still standing. We're all the heroes of our own Vedas, I guess, is what I try and say. And if, and you know, it's like we're holding court here and we're all sort of like representatives of our region, of our area, of our family. And, you know, so you could say that, international politics is a stage, it's a court. We all arrived at court with our various lineages. We contributed. Things politically may have moved a certain direction because of Rosa's involvement and becoming sort of like a figurehead for the Agenda 21 movement. There's a lot of traditional values in that movement. The John Birch Society in specific is something that we really tried to painstakingly distance ourselves from for a lot of reasons. The information is usually really great coming out of like the libertarian LaRouche. There's anarcho-syndicalists. We're not going to say that there's not, looks like great solutions for people. It looks like great things for people to hold on to. But they just end up being another square on the game board that you really should give yourself a chance to roll out of, because you're not at the end. You have not reached the end. And there's no straight path. It's not even a winding path. It doesn't follow any kind of linear path. You're going forward, sideways, backwards in 5D. You're moving in multiple dimensions. And there's possibly a spiritual war at the root of this, of hyper-dimensional, non-corporal, non-material entities who have some kind of vested interest in the, you know, the machine of mankind. And that, you know, we're souls and physical bodies. And at some point, hopefully all the information that people find and seek out helps them reconcile that and find some kind of balance and harmony between their mind and their bodies and their soul and, you know, what they do here with their time on Earth.
Did you know that Rosa's obituary is not even listed anywhere in California? How's that for? That's kind of strange for someone as famous as her.
Yeah, I think she made a huge impression. I don't know about outside of California.
Yeah. I just went on legacy.com and did a search. She's not, in the last 6 months, her death is not even listed.
Yeah, that,
kind of
that's
strange.
A little odd. You got probably a technique that you use to, like, you know, vet events. Like the passing of a celebrity, where I'm sure like there's always going to be conflicting accounts and stuff, but that's sort of like obviously the true crime thing too, is when they start researching, they just sort of compare articles and that making the connections. I think that it's been in so many books and so many Hollywood plots, where there's one person who's maybe not even necessarily a special person. They've been discredited or they're down and out and nobody's going to listen to them, and they stumble on some fantastic secret, and it just creates this archetype of, you know, the crusader, this paladin, somebody who's going to save everybody from the evil cancer-causing corporate pollution or, you know, just whatever various thing. When people don't get real-life validation, and there's no Greenpeace for them to join, there's no Rotary for them to join, and all of the House of Cards fall away, you know, who is there to join to validate you on your, like, quest? So a big part of what we do is just validate, you know, people's individual quest, and I think that people have a right to question the validity of any news that they hear.
Absolutely. And Bill Cosby's being released from jail. Did you read about that?
Yeah, funny thing. I even as a kid, I did not like Bill Cosby.
No, my wife didn't either.
Yeah, my mom did not like him, and so I instinctively did not like him, which is super weird because he was everywhere. You know, the 90s was like...
The 80s, yeah.
It was, yeah, like the late 80s, the early 90s, Cosby was everywhere, and my mom never met him personally, I don't think, but she did work at the Playboy Mansion in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, when she was a teenager. She was 18, and had spent time at, like, the Playboy Mansion in Chicago and whatnot, and there was, I guess to preface that, it was a culture of women being made available, and it was very socially acceptable for the women to be dating the executives. You know, they were not all models and a bunch of porn stars. It was more of an entertainment hospitality culture, but they were available for the higher end men to date. And so it was odd to me that Cosby had a reputation as a rapist and, a non-consensual type of a person that you were going to encounter. In a culture where the women are available for you to date, that's what everybody's doing there. And so it just seemed like so unnecessary, you know, for somebody who's got money and access to women, so that, you know, his sadism, that there was like an undercurrent of an understanding that person was no good. And there was quite a few celebrities who were, you know, they could have been probably very abusive people, but they really went out of their way to be the opposite of that and to give people a different energy signature. And I think, like, if you're going to say, does Bill Cosby have a diametrically opposed opposite character in Hollywood? I would say somebody like Keanu Reeves. You know what I mean? Every opportunity to do everything that Cosby did and more, and he's just like, this totally decent person that gives people an amazing feeling. And we, like, years ago, the Wachowski brothers, now the Wachowski sisters, had said that the conceptual arrangement of the Hegelian dialectic in, you know, encapsulating human thought and instinct was the inspiration for the Matrix. Like, they, you know, basically just were like, shout out Nikki and Nordica, you know, but it hadn't happened yet. Like, the Matrix came out 99 and we were working on what would lead us to the Hegelian dialectic. And we wrote our thesis, What is the Hegelian Dialectic? 2002. I was 17 and I had been seeing those movies in the theater as they came out. So it was part of, like, my conception of the universe. And when they were asked about it, what was the inspiration for the Matrix? And they were like, the Hegelian dialectic. And it was all happening right at the same time where they were just like, you know, here's our banner. Here's our big old banner. And then they put, you know, Hollywood's nicest celebrity out. It's like Neo, the savior of mankind. But is he doing this in a matrix within a matrix? Is there even any kind of real world? So I just think it's blowing everybody's minds. Yeah. You know, that the year 2000, Y2K did it, the 1999, like, oh, this is it. And then I was like, 2012, Mayan apocalypse, oh, this is it again. So these, like, little pushes to people where they're, like, they're a little freaked out. They're afraid, their mortality. They're trying to study the world around them. And I always thought that was a good one to start from. Like, oh, you know, the Matrix, it's like, go around unplugging people and just giving them a chance to screw up in the real world.
Well, if you read Miles Mathis, which I do, there's almost no chance that Bill Cosby went to jail. The whole story, I think, is fake, but it's part of what they call Operation Chaos, which is basically to divide people endlessly, including men against women. So I'm going to post that in the show notes. The Bill Cosby trial, et cetera, is completely fake, like the OJ trial, completely fake. And it's just simply to divide and conquer people. So the idea that he gets let out over some crazy, phony, baloney reason, I can't even remember what I just read. But
Well, and then the dog and pony show of the difference between the criminal trial and the civil, just all the different rules. People really don't understand the difference between criminal and civil. Right. And it's like always been like that. So they just like, they really don't grasp it, and that these people are, they're just, I think they're enjoying themselves, because, like, you know, you start to notice it's arbitrary. They're manufacturing chaos. It's sponge sugar. It is probably distracting us from a more natural, less anxiety ridden way of life. So the solution to the great fear would probably be to reduce people's dependency, you know, on the, you know, the modernity of things, because it's just, it, there's such a demand, you know, to be a successful modern person. You've got to have your insurance, you've got to have your paperwork. I know a lot of people who are great, they're really smart, and they just can't keep track of a single password or a single account, and they have to reset everything every time they log in. And it's just way more common than somebody that's got it all together and has a perfect file system. So there's a lot of things that we're not told about what is going to be expected of us. And then that one of the things that's going to be expected of us is that we have to decide whether we're normal or whether we're a weirdo. And normal people do not think, maybe the aliens genetically engineered us for food and are harvesting our souls. That's not normal. But it's just as realistic as any other, you know, synopsis of the world we live in, depending on, you know, who you talk to. So I think that the great journey really is talking to as many people as you can and asking them what they think. And I think sometimes I am guilty of this. I've judged many a book by its cover. And I'll look at a very benign-looking, like, man or woman, maybe somebody really attractive, like somebody who was a model in magazines, that just has a very benign Hollywood face, and they just appear to have a perfect life. And then they open their mouth, and they're like, this is all bullshit. Like, they just iconoclast, like, not necessarily patriotic, but, you know, this, like, just intrinsic personal strength, I think, and that's the light that people start shining. Some people talk about the light, you know, your individual, your glow, like, wow, you really don't need to be accepted and have a group of people around you that look the same and sound the same and all validate each other. You're okay with being disagreed with, and, like, I've been guilty of judging books by their cover so much, and then you talk to people and you come to find out that they have really intriguing, dynamic life paths. You never know who they met that changed their mind about everything. You're like, oh, I traveled to Africa and I talked to this tribe of people, and that was that. My whole life from that point forward, I understood, you know, where I had been misled. So these awakenings, this is a time of awakening. I think people who are into prophecy and stuff, I think that's great. I really encourage that, because that encourages the legendary status that I think that everybody should have in their own mind, sort of yourselves. Like, you could say that as a joke, you're a legend in your own mind, but to find value in your path, to appreciate yourself every step that you take, that these are your Vedas, this is our legacy. If people are interested in leaving a legacy that's actually, you know, authentic and represents, you know, some great purpose. If your purpose is just to let other people know that they're not alone and that they're not as small as they think, we're all tiny who's on the little flower.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's shouting to the void. I call it shouting to the void.
Yeah. Well, we've been on for almost 3 hours. It was very interesting, Nordica. I'm getting a little sleepy just because I usually can't stay awake past 11. So,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. You got a lot to say. You're a very interesting person. That's why I wanted to have you on.
I think we need to do another book.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's looking like another book.
Maybe we
should, because we didn't cover too much of the religious.
No. There's so much to cover, though, really.
Yeah.
And maybe we should get your mother on, too, if she's interested. We'll have to see if she wants to.
Yeah, I sent her the link, and I think she had the same problem as me.
Yeah,
so,
she tried a few times. She popped on and popped off, so it obviously wasn't sticking. So now, go ahead.
So I'm down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down. Just let's set it up.
Yeah, we'll set it up. I'm here usually 3-4 times a week, so we'll set it up and maybe talk a little more about the book, because we went all over the place tonight, which is fine. It's interesting.
I kind of gloss over the book. I always gloss over it. I talk about, oh yeah, and then the book does this and that, but I don't really talk about the book specifically. Like, there's an outline. I do kind of dance around the topic. We're sort of a marketing fiasco, which is why
that's funny.
It makes sense that people hire companies, you know, and teams of people to market themselves, because it's sort of
it's not easy.
Sort of a lofty expectation to expect somebody to be able to do all the work and then also like promote it and be able to know, you know, what the right moves are to make. I think that's why we sort of just battened down the hatches and just published it and left it at that,
sure,
without the whole promotional thing. But that could change. The positive response and the interest is obviously that's a motivator.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining in. And the name of your book, if people want to find it, is 2020, Our Common Destiny and the Definitive Anti-Communitarian Manifesto. And I guess if they want to find you, they can look you up on Facebook as well. That's probably your main place to go, I guess.
Yep. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I'm trying to get both Mom and I on more of a broader social media platform, because our Facebooks it's a limited platform. Mm-hmm. That's just the one that we've picked for a while. So I'm interested in Twitch. I don't know a lot about it, but I really want to like branch out and stuff. But if you do searches for our names, it's not all official, and I think that's fine. If people search for us and find something that someone else reprinted, you know, it's not like just as good, but it's like, you know, maybe validating. If people wonder if our information is good, well, there's all the people who thought that it was good enough to grab a chunk of it and, you know, put it on their own website and stuff like that. And I'm working on more of an official, like a broadcast for us, like, here's our brand, you know, one-stop shop, we're your source. Our old research is all sort of disorganized and disheveled and in need of a really good update, like possibly a wiki format or something like that. That's my domain, content management, and then get these podcasts and various interviews that we've participated in, like all in, you know, one place with audio files and stuff. It's a tremendous amount of work, and I do have 4 kids, and I'm really into it. But the reality of what I'm able to do.
Yeah,
and,
four children.
And we dialed it back. Yeah, we dialed it back a lot. So it's when you ask, maybe it's time for us to, you know, take our maybe rightful, some people think it's our rightful place. That's really intense, sort of a, that's a diner, you know, that's an emotional diner to be sitting in, is you've kind of got to decide where to go from here.
Mm-hmm.
While you, you know, sit over your coffee cup.
Yeah, you got your hands full with all those children, so good on you. All right, well, have a nice...
And hopefully there is a future for them.
I hope so, too. Yeah, well, we have to keep fighting. Keep fighting and stay away from the needle. Yeah. That's what I tell people, whether they like to hear it or not. Stay away. Stay away as if your life depended on it.
Yeah, withhold... Maybe delay your participation until you get, you know, more data. More data is needed. I think that we can empower ourselves in a really basic way by echoing them. More data is required. That's one thing that they always say. The whole data gathering, the premise of these smart places that are being designed for the future is based on, you know, data that's mined, gathered out of humankind. So give it to them. That's why we post. That's why we publish. Because here's your data. You know, analyze it. And we'll be doing the same. So constantly just receive data and make the best choice for you. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thanks, Bob.
Okay. All the best. And take care, Nordica. And we'll connect with your... with your mother as well in the future. All right.
Thanks. All right. Have a good evening.
Great. Have a good night. All right. Take care, everybody. Take care. And we'll talk next time.
Great.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, looks like I froze up.
Bye-bye. All right. There goes Nordica. And it was a long show. She's got a lot to say. Tomorrow we'll be back around 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. We should be talking to Simon and Hoy if all goes well with the connection. All right, thanks everyone for hanging in. It was a long one, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.